can't beat them, join them. If you're scared to fight it out, watch him and watch out. If you think your girl's a good looker, take a good look at this guy's dolls.
My name's Bond. James Bond.
The new Bond. The different 007. On Her Majesty's Secret Service. The new star. The different Bond. The name's Lazenby. George Lazenby. And he's got it made. The different Bond woman. The name's Rake. Diana Rake. This one's got class and style. Telly Savalas. Gabrielle Fazzetti. And 007 times more excitement. If you think you know your Bond, think again. This one's different.
It's true!
Drop everything. Try and make it. Marvelous is the password for the different Bond. Says,
this never happened to the other fella.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and happy 2024, everybody. We're back. It's been about 6 months since we did a Film and Water, and back when we did one in June of 2023, my guest was Dr. Chris Lewis talking about a James Bond film. And for a change of pace, I've got Dr. Chris Lewis back with me to do a commentary on a James Bond film. Hi, Chris.
Under His Majesty's Official Secrets Act, I'm authorized to tell you that the real Chris Lewis has lost himself among the churches of Brittany on a brass rubbing tour. But I'm also authorized to wish you a very happy Christmas and happy new year, Rob.
Thank you very much. I'm really excited to be back doing a commentary with you. We've done a bunch of these. They've always been a lot of fun. And we've been talking about doing On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which is, again, the film we'll be talking about. You saw the show notes, everybody, for a while. But it took so long to kind of get us coordinated that we have now fallen into this is not really much of an anniversary, but it's the 55th. Anniversary of this film. It came out on December 18th, 1969. And so why not? Why not do it right now? We both love this film. But since this is a very long movie, we'll have lots of time to talk. So we're going to get right to it. I'm going to count down. We're going to go from five. And if you're watching the movie along with us, everybody, it's available on various streaming services and on every conceivable home video format. You can queue it up with us and listen along. But hopefully, if you're not watching the film along with us, you will still be able to find us entertaining just as we prattle on about this really remarkable James Bond movie. So, Chris, if you're ready, I'm counting down and we'll do 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and then go. So, OK, everybody. So get ready. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. All right. Well, obviously, the big deal here is that we have, at least by 1969, a new James Bond, the first new James Bond that we had at this point. So let's get the big conversation out of the way up front. Where are you, Chris, on George Lazenby as James Bond, just in general?
I think Lazenby is underrated, I have to say. I know he was not an experienced actor, and I know that he was a bit of a diva on set, but I think with the benefit of 55 years of being able to look back on it, I actually don't think he's bad, and I think it's a bit of a shame he didn't do more.
Agreed. This was growing up. This came out long before I was born, so I saw it later on after I became a James Bond fan and had a chance to check out all the films. I did tend to regard this one as, oh, that one, because it's not Connery and it's not my favorite James Bond, Roger Moore. But as I got older, you know, I would watch it again, maybe every couple of years, and I go, eh, it isn't that bad.
Yeah.
And then over time, it's become, I would put it in my top five James Bond films of all time. I think this is really one of, not just a great action spy thriller, it's one of the best James Bond movies, period.
I'm gonna tell you now, Rob, this I think is probably my favorite Bond film. I think it's great. I mean, you know, I think, like I say, is Lazenby the best Bond? No. But I think as a movie, it really holds together. It's absolutely pacey, you know, and Diana Rigg, as we will discover, is absolutely top notch. Mm-hmm. I think this is a great film. Really love this one. And yeah, you know, plenty of others, like you say, you know, definitely top three, probably my favorite of all time.
I know that Chris Nolan loves it. He's been very open about it. And he sort of, quote unquote, I don't want to say took, because it's not like you can, you know, action scenes are action scenes, but that big snow mountain chase in Inception is right out of this film. And he acknowledges that. I mean, he says, you know, there was this whole thing about that he wanted to do James Bond film, and the, you know, the Broccoli's, I guess, didn't really want him to do it or whatever. And so he's like, fine, I'll go do my own thing. And, you know, we can argue about whether that's even, should you even have big name directors doing these films, but, and we'll talk about this film's director shortly. It's funny. If you watch the trailer, the main trailer, not the one that actually opened this episode, but the main trailer and the poster, which is, by the way, a great poster, it says far up, far out, far more, James Bond is back, they hide that it's not Sean Connery.
Yeah,
because all previous posters, it was Sean Connery is James Bond, is 007, and this time they're just talking about James Bond because they're trying to kind of hide we don't have Sean Connery here.
Well, for those that are watching along, if anybody's watching along, we're in the opening scene now where Diana Rigg is in her sparkly diaphanous frock in the least convincing suicide attempt of all time. She's sort of slowly walking into the sea. And James Bond's seen all very serious and driving down onto the beach. But yeah, I mean, the whole scene, even up till this point, his face is in shadow. Could this still be Sean Connery? I assume the hunt for Bond made the kind of headlines that it would today in sort of social media. I assume that it was out there that Connery had gone and they were looking for a new actor. But, you know, they're keeping it, they're playing the cards really close to their chest at this point. You know, you've seen very, very extreme close-ups of his chin, or, you know, his eye looking through the sight of his rifle and that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's still, you know, even now, you know, it's kind of shadowy, and could it still be Sean Connery? And you're just about now to discover that, nope, another guy.
Yeah, he gets out of the car and his face is draped in shadow because this is dawn, so it's nice and dark. So this still could be, if you don't know enough, you know, you're not following these things, you could believe this is still Sean Connery, but we're going to get a big giant close up of him in a moment. We're going to go, oh no, that scene right there, that's pretty clear. You'd have to be looking at your popcorn at the moment to not know that that's not Sean Connery.
This is the moment where James Bond regenerates like Doctor Who.
Here we go. Oh God, she's gorgeous. Oh my Lord, Diana Rigg is so ridiculously pretty. That's just absurd. And there it is, everybody. James Bond. That's okay. We got a different voice here. And then now we're going to get into this really great action moment. And
this is a terrific fight, isn't it? And the goon, this one goon, he's wearing sort of a blue costume with a white thing, kind of reminds me of a Fantastic Four uniform. All you need is the number four on the front.
That's right. It's got like that color blue with the white piping. True. Yeah. I never thought about that, but that's true.
Fantastic Four. Yeah.
We're going to see in a moment. By the way, this is directed by, Peter Hunt. And we're going to see just the innovation sort of he brought to this is like these fight scenes are just ever so slightly, I think, undercranked with the camera, where they are going a little faster than they really can go. And so they took the footage and they just jimmied it just a touch to speed it up. Not so much that it becomes a Keystone Cops film, you know, where it's noticeable or cartoonish. But it's just enough that it gives it this real crazy energy. And that is not something that they had in any of the James Bond films to this point. And I don't know about you, Chris, like to me, the two previous Bond films to this, Thunderball and You Only Live Twice, while I enjoy them both, I find them to be less fun than the previous three. I feel like that by Thunderball, this the series was getting a little lugubrious, just a little. And it's funny because this film that we're talking about is at 2 hours and 22 minutes, the longest of the Bond films to this point. Now, the Craig films would get longer, unfortunately, in some cases.
The modern trend, Rob.
Yeah. But I mean, right now, I mean, you would think that, you know, if Thunderball is getting a little slow, boy, why do you want to watch an even longer film? But this film doesn't drag.
Yeah. No, absolutely not. It rattles along. I mean, Thunderball is I'm sorry to say, because Thunderball is the novel that I read the most, actually.
And interesting.
I think it's a great novel. You and Live Twice, we have to be careful because that's my other half's favorite. So we watch that quite a bit.
I enjoy it quite a bit. I mean, I enjoy them all. It's just a matter of, if I have to rank them, I put those two at the bottom.
Yeah.
Of the Connery initial run is what I mean. Okay. Oh, there we go. This never happened to the other fellow.
Yeah. What do you think of the fourth wall breaking at that point?
You know, it's funny. Like I said earlier, it was one of those things where in the beginning I didn't like it, and now I kind of laugh at it. I just go, okay, it's a nice way of just acknowledging, okay, let's all, come on, everybody. Well, we know what's happening here.
Yeah, and it goes straight into the title sequence, which goes out of its way to reference all the previous films, so you are absolutely in no doubt that this is in continuity.
Which I love. I love that they do this. That's great. I think this is really, really, there you go, starring
George
Lazenby.
And I think Lazenby. You needed to, don't you? Because I think, the question is this the same guy, anyway, but can I give you my hot take on this film while the credits are on?
Of course.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service is the finest Christmas-based action movie ever made,
and that is a hot
stand
take.
By that, and if you're a fan of Die Hard, you can suck it.
Chris.
No, I think this is underrated as a Christmas theme movie, and I think watch it, and I think you'll thank me because it's really Christmassy. It's the only Bond Christmas film, really. I think, isn't it? I can't think of any that reference Christmas in any other way.
There's the one with Christmas Jones with Denise Richards. Jones.
Does not count. not allowing that answer. But I think the other reason why this is one of my favorite Bond films is so many of the Bond movies that come after it reference it. You know, there's there's one where Moore's Bond goes and lays flowers on Tracy's grave.
For Your Eyes Only, which is my favorite James Bond film of all time. It opens with him visiting the grave.
Yeah. And the most recent one, was it No Time to Die? That's got the Louis Armstrong music playing throughout.
Mm-hmm.
So, there is something about the emotional damage done to Bond, not the physical damage that you get in every movie, but this is something striking at the heart of Bond that just resonates throughout the series for decades and decades to come, no matter who the actor playing it is. And I wonder if that would be true if it was Connery. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. That's always the sort of directed by Peter Hunt. Again, we'll talk about him in a moment. But that's sort of the knock on the film is that, this would have had so much more resonance if it had been Connery, if it had been the Bond that we have been following since 1962 and then watching him go through this. By the way, anybody, if you haven't seen this film, don't be listening to us talk over it. Go watch the movie because we're going to be
the film.
Yeah, we're going to be spoiling the big moment at the very end of the film. But people have said, it would work so much better if it was Connery because you'd have emotional investment. And then when this horrible thing happens to him, you would feel it more than this new guy. And I completely understand that attitude. But I also look at this and say, this is the beginning of the different Bond. I mean, obviously, it's the beginning of the different Bonds. I mean, that's kind of self-evident. But to me, it's like this is a different world. Yes, it's the same James Bond. There's going to be numerous references. You just talked about the credits, and there's going to be a scene coming up where they explicitly reference the other films. But it's still different. We're just in a slightly alternate James Bond dimension. Yeah. And that's what's happening to this guy. I don't know if I would buy Sean Connery's James Bond falling in love. I just don't know. He seems so...
He's too hard.
Yeah. Too cold. Yes, exactly.
Too icy. Too married to the job. Lazenby's got a little bit of vulnerability, and that's okay. Not much, but a little bit.
That's it. Great. That is it exactly. Yeah. So I don't know if I would have just followed that. But here, this James Bond can fall in love and... we'll talk again. We'll get when we get to the. We're gonna have to talk about the ending way before we get there because the ending is very abrupt and there's a lot to say about it. And the film will
spoilers
be over by the time
for a 55-year-old movie.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, here this is very Connery. This is right out of Dr. No. You know, we're kind of our first scene of him where he's sitting and.
There was a lovely, speaking of the director, there was a lovely transition where you go from the view of the ripples on the swimming pool outside his apartment to the ripples on the puddle where the neon light is advertising the casino at night. That's just a really, really arty little shot, which you don't really think of James Bond as doing.
Yeah, this is, I said, well, we've talked about Peter Hunt. Peter Hunt was the editor on all the previous Bond films to this point, and he had been wanting to direct. And the Broccoli's kind of kept putting him off. And then they finally gave him the opportunity to do this. And this film was certainly a hit. It was less of a hit than You Only Live Twice. How could it not be when you don't have Sean Connery, who was a global superstar, thanks to the James Bond films. But nevertheless, I mean, the film, you know, the film started, James Bond made Connery a star and then it kind of worked the other way around. You know, then Connery became the sort of driver of it. And Peter Hunt never got to direct another James Bond movie. And in fact, he never worked on the franchise again.
Oh, really?
And that he went on to it. Yeah, I don't understand that. Now, he went and had a, you know, I don't mean to knock the guy in any way, because I think he does a great job here. But an OK directing career. He went on to direct Roger Moore in two films called Gold and another one with Lee Marvin called Shout at the Devil. He did Assassination with Charles Bronson. He did another movie called Death Hunt with Charles Bronson and Lee Marvin. He apparently was offered Never Say Never Again, but turned it down because he didn't want to anger the Broccolis, which doesn't make any sense to me because the Broccolis already kind of gotten rid of him. What was to lose at that point? Yeah. But he
and they were already angry because that film existed. So.
Exactly. But it's like based on this film, he should have had a huge directing career. He should have been one of the preeminent action directors of the 70s based on this. And he really wasn't. And that is just such a crime because he just crushes this.
And if it's true that Lazenby and Diana Rigg did not get on that well, which is, you know the myth around this, isn't it? They just didn't hit it off. He gets amazing performances out of both of them. You know, the diplomacy he would have had to show for the egos involved is incredible. Amazing. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, they have a genuine chemistry here. Yeah, you would again. We've heard that they didn't get along. And you'd be like, you'd never know it. They really seem to. I mean, part of it is her character. Part of it is Diana Rigg. Diana Rigg just had a sort of steely resolve in anything that she did. Were you a fan of the Avengers? But do you know of her before, outside of this film, before you saw it?
Yeah, and I haven't. Avengers feels like one of those series I should have seen, you know, throughout, and it hasn't been reshown on British television as much as I think it ought to have done. So yeah, I've certainly seen episodes of it, but it's this kind of thing that you kind of go, yeah, you know, given that I like all that kind of, you know, 60s, 70s British TV, I think I would love the Avengers, but I really need to get into it. And it's sort of, it's got that weird thing. I am probably the only person in the entire history of the globe that actually quite liked the early 90s Avengers movie with Uma Thurman and which was, and Sean Connery.
And Sean Connery, ironically
enough.
Have you
seen it? It's incredibly peculiar.
I have, yes.
I actually rather liked it, which sets me apart somehow or other. Make of that what you will.
Love this fight scene. This fight scene, again, another terrific, just the kinetic energy of it. It's just the quick cuts of it. I mean, Peter Hunt is not the editor of this, but he's the director, and you have to assume he had a very heavy hand in directing it. But yeah, I mean, this is such a he is such a knockdown, drag out, ass kicking James Bond, you know, and it's terrific. It's fun to watch. This film relies very, very actually doesn't rely at all on the gadgets. They really scale back the gadgets. He's going to eat a little bit of the caviar here.
There's barely any. Yeah, that's about £2,000 worth of caviar. Q's barely in it. We get the very opening thing is Q advertising radioactive lint, and then he shows up at the end. And when we get the one gadget we do get, Bond has to manufacture himself. And again, there's a bit of a throwback to that in one of the Bond movies, one of the Daniel Craig Bond movies, isn't it? Where he goes, a gun and a radio, it's not exactly Christmas. They strip it back to basics, and there's no, you know, special watch here. There's no, you know, there's nothing kind of fantastical gadgets wise here, is there? It's, nope. It's, you know, it's him and a gun, and that's about it, really.
That's one of the things I like about For Your Eyes Only, which I mentioned is my all time favorite Bond film, is that part of it is when I saw it. But just also that it, God, she's just so gorgeous. I'm going to have to,
Hepburn.
Oh man, yeah. I'm going to have to really watch myself over the course of 2 hours. Cause it's every time they show her, you're like, God, she's just, but again, she just has, like when she shows up in Game of Thrones,
if you have to disappear for a cold shower.
Yeah. Seriously. Point, but I mean, thank you. I appreciate it. But like Game of Thrones, she's great in that, you know, I mean, she's got and she's the one who ends up getting ends up killing Joffrey, you know, of all these people that over several seasons, everyone's trying to kill that little shit on that show. And she's the one who manages to do it. And you're like, yeah, of course it's Diana Rigg who did it. You know, she's the one who could pull it off. Yeah. Actually, she just passed away a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Her last movie was Edgar Wright's Last Night in Soho, which we saw in theater. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. It's got quite a good British cast, actually, hasn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Probably dig that one out. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it. It's not I wouldn't say it's his finest film or anything, because that's Hot Fuzz, as we both know. But my wife and I both enjoyed it when we saw it. And it was great to see Diana Rigg in it so prominently. Yeah, she's got a big role in it. So,
and it's traditional for me to point out that she has also been in Doctor Who.
Of course.
Rob, she was in The Crimson Horror in 2013 against Matt Smith's Doctor. So for Doctor Who fans.
So, okay.
Because there's quite a few of these.
There's going to be a ton of crossover here. So, okay. Related to Doctor Who, because now we have a new Doctor. Has the new Doctor Who started yet? Is that?
Yeah, last night. Yeah.
It's already. Oh, she's already started.
When we're recording this. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, with the last Bond film, The No Time to Die, which ironically turns out to be a perfect time to die, because spoiler alert, everybody, James Bond does in fact die at the end of the film. It's official. James Bond is not the same James Bond. It can't be. I mean, I think they already kind of gave that up with Casino Royale, because there's no way to insert this story into the history of the Daniel Craig James Bond story. There just isn't. So we've a new James Bond. But what do you think about that? Do you prefer it being loosely one guy, or is it okay that it's just sort of alternate parallel dimension James Bond?
I've been a Doctor Who fan as long as I can remember, Rob. You know, new lead actors are, you know, ingrained in my...
But there's an in-story reason for that, though. I mean, at least.
Yeah, you know, for sure. And in fact, yeah, last night's episode did something very strange with Doctor Who's regeneration. So, but I'll leave you to watch that, because I know you'll be on the edge of your seat wanting to watch that, Rob. I don't mind. I think it's okay. I think, you know, I can see why they were trying to build this film into the continuity and carry it on. But I think we all kind of go, look, you know, spy movies work on, you know, in some fantastical way on sort of real world events, don't they? You know, that, you know, Smersh was all Russians and, you know, they're still a bit of a threat, but, you know, other threats have come on. So Pierce Brosnan was fighting in North Korea. Well, right. I can't see that you'd have a Sean Connery movie set in North Korea. So I think there has to be a bit of a touchstone, and life moves on, and, you know, politics moves on and all that kind of stuff. And the threats that James Bond deals with have to follow suit. Otherwise they just get out of touch. I remember, you know, when the Cold War was coming to an end, and one of the big questions was, well, who's James Bond going to fight now? You know, mm-hmm. Well, you know what? There's still bad powers out there in the world. And if there really aren't, if we live in a utopia, you can always create Spectre, you know? So, mm-hmm. So I think it's fine. You know, they don't all have to be, you know, one after the other, and it's all continuous, because, like I say, this movie is, you know, a quarter of the way through the franchise. and it's 55 years old, you know, so so stuff moves on. You just gotta move with it. And storytelling moves on as well, you know. You wouldn't, if you were remaking this movie, you wouldn't make it shot for shot, would you? You'd change the way things are, because our expectation of stories and movie making has also modernized, and so you'd have to revamp it a bit. But I like it in all its retro glory, I have to say.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I said it's, you know, obviously Connery comes back after this film. They tempt him with an outrageous, for the time, paycheck to come back for one more. And there is a reference to the events of this film in the opening of that film. And then, of course, there were references to Tracy in, oh, I love this. I love this shot of him throwing the nut. I love that zoom in of him with the nut. That's something. Okay, there we go. That is something that Peter Hunt does in this film that I don't think you get a lot of in any of the other Bond films. Again, no knock on the other directors, but there are some just, I love that he throws them there. I love that there are some memorable shots. There are just some memorable camera shots. Yeah. And I love Bond crouching as the camera zoom pushes in on. I think that's just a great, memorable little scene.
It's Bond as a coiled spring.
Yes.
Isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
Terrific. Yeah. It's terrific.
One thing I would, if I was modernizing this movie, one thing I'd get rid of is the absolutely toxic masculinity and terrible misogyny.
Well,
awful things in here which have absolutely not aged well at all.
Yeah,
we'll come to those moments. Yeah.
Well, we've met our main culprit of this, which is Draco, played by Gabriel Frizzetti. He passed away in 2015. He was in some really great films like Once Upon a Time in the West, The Night Porter. He's in Vincent Minnelli's final film, A Matter of Time, from 1976. He is going to say he's Tracy's dad, and he is just wow. He is something else, this guy.
Unreconstructed. Let's go with that.
Let's go. I mean, again, not that it's okay, but this is 1969. This guy is what, probably 55? People looked older. This guy's, I can't believe I'm this guy's age, but he looks to me looks older than I do. But people looked older back then. But I mean, think about it. This is 69. He's born 1910, probably 1915. Like, I mean, that's what are, you know, these are what his ideas are going to be. Yeah. And of course, you know, Tracy is completely rejecting all that. You know, I mean, he keeps talking about how his daughter needs to be contained and controlled, and his daughter can't be any of those things. Yeah. So she loves her father.
Yeah,
but she is
69
just kind of like,
was the summer of love, hey, wasn't it?
Exactly. I think 68 actually. But close enough. But you know, she just doesn't buy. She's a modern woman. She's a modern liberated woman, and she loves her dad, but she's not buying any of this nonsense. And as well, she shouldn't, because he's a dinosaur here. So I mean, come on, what are you gonna do? But yeah, that's he's now. By the way, I should say, since you and I did our last commentary, my wife and I saw this film at a drive-in.
Great.
Yeah, okay. There's a drive-in still in operation, not that far from here, called the Mahoning Drive-In. It's in Pennsylvania. It's in kind of in the heart of Pennsylvania. And they were doing a James Bond triple feature of You Only Live Twice, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, and The Spy Who Loved Me. Now, unfortunately, because it was in the summer that I think we went right after you and I recorded our Octopussy commentary, it didn't start until 8 o'clock at night, which means,
so you finished, 2 a.m. or something?
Oh, well, no, the On Her Majesty's was over at 2 a.m. There was still one more to go at that point. And I hate to admit this, because I love The Spy Who Loved Me. It's my second favorite of the Moore films. We left before that one started, because it was we're just too tired. Like, I just can't, because that's already a lot. I mean, you Only Live Twice is 2 hours, and then you have, you know, a half hour of interstitial, let's all go to the lobby, and then you have this for 2.5, and it was just like, I'm in my 50s, I can't stay up till 5 o'clock in the morning and drive home for an hour and a half after this.
Let's get to the lobbies, let's get to the bathroom.
I just couldn't do it. So we saw the first two, And so I got to see this, and my wife had never seen this film, and she enjoyed it. She actually enjoyed this quite a bit, but it was great seeing it on a big screen. That was so fun to see this in that format.
I think it is very retro stylish, this film, isn't it?
Yeah,
it
I love his outfit. I love Bond's outfit here with the tan jacket and the tan pants with the orange shirt. Like it's can you picture Roger Moore dressed like that? Sean Connery. I don't think I can.
I think I could picture Moore in something similar. Maybe not the orange, but yeah, I think I could see if he's on his sort of, slightly off-duty moments. I think I could see Moore in it, but definitely not Connery. I was thinking actually in the very opening gun barrel shot, I think this might be the last time that you see Bond walking across in a hat.
I think so.
Because Connery would quite often wear a hat. The only thing they do the hat for is, of course, throwing it onto Moneypenny's hat
stand, the coat rack,
I think he's about to come up. Actually,
yep. I think that part of the reason is that that Lazenby. Oh, let's talk about. There we go. Perfect timing. He threw the hat right on the thing. Here's Lois Maxwell. He's going to romance her. She's like, okay, Miss Moneypenny. Same old James.
Yeah.
Kind of underscoring.
Yeah.
Same old James.
Yeah.
But anyway, but Lazenby was, of course, a model before he did this. And I think that's probably why he looks so good. He knows how to wear clothes. He looks styled. Not that Connery didn't. But I think Lazenby, just by his nature of his history, is more comfortable wearing, kind of fashion forward outfits. And I think that's why he looks so dashing and so he's a handsome man on top of it. But he's very dashing and he's comfortable. By the way, you just noticed that. Is there like a little room between Moneypenny's office and M's? There's like a little dark chamber between the two because he opens the door and you see darkness. And then he opens the door to M's office and there's more darkness. You don't see Moneypenny through the door frame.
It's like a double door, isn't it? Perhaps M's office is insulated.
Perhaps.
With lead shielding or something. Yeah. And they've got this... padded door. Not quite sure what the leather padded door is for. Noise reduction or something, I guess. But she is such a force of nature.
It is. It's two doors. There's two doors. Oh, look, there's even lights that light up. So it's like it's a projection room or something. I think that's what it is. By the way, we're seeing the fourth wall of this office. This is the reverse angle of the shot. Yeah. When we came in, we saw Bond coming in. I think that's I always appreciate that extra effort to build the whole set, 360 degrees and show it.
There Lois Maxwell is so good, isn't she? She never gets very much to do, but boy, does she stamp her authority on whatever scene she's in.
All right, now here's
absolutely unmistakable.
Now here's Bond in his office, and we're going to get a great gag here. Where he's going to open the drawer and we're going to see the remnants of previous Bond films, which I love it. I think it's such a great gag. The knife from Dr. No and the watch. There is the watch from Russia with Love. Pulls the wind.
The rebreather thing.
And then the rebreather from Thunderball. Yeah. I love it. We can talk about this later because, again, we got a lot of time to kill. But, you know what? Let's. Sorry, ma'am. My condolences, Chris. Right? This is our. There's no more Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yes. Well,
that's not a phrase anymore.
We switch over to His Majesty's Secret Service. So,
and that's the first time that's going to be that in anyone's lifetime.
Well, for a very long period of time. And actually, if you think about who's coming up, actually, it will be. Because we've got William, and then we've got what's William's little boy called? Anyway, so basically, we've got three kings. We've got a king now, and we've got two more kings coming up, barring terrible tragedy. So actually, it'll be His Majesty's for another generation, and then who knows after that? So George, Prince George. Can we just talk about how James Bond gets into bed with somebody who's basically mafiosi? Draco is trying to go legit, but he is basically mafia. And I do think that, maybe MI6 might have something to say about, sidling up to mafia bosses on the side. I think they might have a problem with that.
Whatever you got to do to get the job done, man. I mean, what do you want?
Well, and that's the thing at the end, isn't it? MI6 are definitely not having any part of the final battle, and so he calls on Draco to provide the troops. Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Here is Diana Rigg in a yet another absolutely stunning Spanish-inspired outfit.
I love it. It looks like Zorro, you know. It's terrific. And this car, look at this car. This is the car that thinks it's a house. I mean, look at this thing. It could drive 15 people comfortably. Look at that. Look, she again, boy, they look great. I mean, everyone just looks so good. They look so smart. Look, you got the whip and the oh my God. Oh, by the way, so this bullfighting scene, I hate the concept of bullfighting. It's barbaric. It should be completely gotten rid of. It should never have existed, and it should not be a thing. But this particular type of bullfighting does not involve violence towards the bull. It actually is, which makes it to me even more useless. But it is just they just sort of tease the bull and then run around and try to run away from it. But they don't stab it. There's none of these bulls. I mean, again, you could argue the bulls don't want to be here anyway. And I'm big on not having animals in films because animals don't want to be there, no matter what the animal is. They don't want to be on a weird hot set. But nevertheless, this at least doesn't feature the bulls getting gored or anything like that, which is, makes me feel good because I hate seeing that kind of stuff in films. But here's look, it looks great with his, what is that, a cravat? What is that he's got on? That
Yeah,
thing he meets in.
it's super stylish. I mean, he's doing that
Yeah.
Englishman abroad thing, which he will do later when he's Sir Hillary, call me Hilly. But he's sort of all tweed all the time, isn't he? So, very much the Englishman abroad here.
Now, here is Virginia North, and she is probably most famous for playing Volnavia in The Abominable Dr. Fibes. She is Vincent
Oh,
Price's
okay.
daughter slash assistant in pulling off his plot of revenge, and she never speaks throughout the film.
Okay.
But she's terrific. She passed away in 2004. These are really her two big credits. I absolutely
Okay.
love Dr. Fives. I just think that's just a marvelously fun film, and it's great to see. Now, I don't know, again, what would be the point of this, of just having the
I've
bulls
never
sort of
seen it.
run around?
I think I heard, didn't I hear Chris and Cindy talking about it and kind of went,
Well, you know, it's the
maybe
funniest.
not.
It's the funniest thing, Chris. It is. I don't go in for men and women be different. That's just very reductive or whatever. But I have noticed women just don't like Dr. Fibes and men do. I don't know what it is because
Okay,
my
maybe
wife
I'll give it a
loves
go.
Vincent Price and she watched it and
Okay.
she was like, "What is this?" And Cindy had the
Okay.
same reaction. So I don't know what it is. I don't know why there's something
Weird.
about it, but I
Okay.
love the
Okay.
first Dr. Fibes. I think it's a
Okay.
terrific, perfectly fun movie. And but anyway, but then Virginia North is beautiful and very kind of stoic, and so she's perfect in that film. It's just kind of this
Yeah. And
implement of her father's revenge.
she has this great sort of very dry line, doesn't she? And it's about, I think there's lots of things you don't know about Mr. Bond. It would be interesting to attend night school. And she gets a very sort of dirty look from Diana Rigg.
And there she's staring there. I see. I love that Teresa's telling Papa, "You'll never see me again." Like she's not taking any crap from the dad. Look at
No.
the stare she gives. Like, see, he folds.
Yeah.
Like most male chauvinists, they fold when they're pushed back a little bit. You know, they're not really. They're not really. If you have to go around saying you're an alpha male, you are not an alpha male by definition. You have to go around. I'm the king of the yard, whatever, dude. So whatever. But yeah. Sister Teresa's just not, you know. But so Lazenby here. I mean, you know, is he a great actor? Well, we never really got to know because he never really had much of a career after this. He has continued to work
Yeah.
and been in things, but a lot of it has been sort of trading on his James Bond identity. But
Yeah.
I don't know how good of an actor do you need to be James Bond? Exactly. I don't mean that to be a knock, but do you need to be Marlon Brando to be James Bond? I don't know.
I think you need to have a really good balance, actually. I think you need to be, I think what Daniel Craig was able to do, he was very much on the harder end, wasn't he, of Bond,
Much so. Yeah, definitely.
Did you believe that Daniel Craig's Bond would shoot you between the eyes, given, in a heartbeat if he needed to? Yeah, you absolutely did. He wasn't, he had odd little humorous moments. Roger Moore, I think, towards the, probably started on, you know, more at that end and sort of got hammier and hammier and cornier as it went on. So I think you do have to be able to strike that balance, don't you? You have to have that sort of slightly sarcastic, hard humour that you can pull off. And I, do you know what? I think he does. I think mm-hmm. Lazenby does a decent enough job. And I think if he'd not, he sort of went a bit hippie-ish, didn't he? It was 1969 after all, and sort of had this sort of slightly odd trajectory and just didn't really want to be part of the mainstream. But I think if he'd stuck with it, I think he could have been really good. I think so. He had promise as Bond. And if this was his opening shot, I don't know what a second and a third one with him would have looked like, but I think he would only have got better. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a, you know, you're talking about parallel universe Bonds. Mm-hmm. There's a parallel universe where we got Diamonds Are Forever with Lazenby, you know?
Yeah. They signed him for 7 films, so he could have presumably
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they would have said them, I mean, like 7 films that would have been all the way through up to, by the way, this montage here of the two of them. I mean, I can't say that I have every moment of all the films committed to memory, but I don't recall there being much in the way of montages
in a James
Bond film to this point. You know, it just ended, but like, we don't really, this really kind of knew of
just a
music montage of them romancing and falling in love and stuff. Again, it's another innovation Pierre Hunt's bringing to the thing.
I think the problem for me is that this moment doesn't feel earned yet. You know,
a little too soon.
Absolutely at loggerheads, and suddenly it turns on a dime, and suddenly they're all lovey-dovey, and it doesn't quite feel right. But you get we'll come back to it later on in the film, because I think they do earn it, and they do get it then. It's kind of a bit, how does her absolute hatred of him turn so quickly into, you know, riding on horses through the woods and, you know,
going on the beach,
the park, and kind of stuff. It just doesn't feel quite there yet.
He's just that charming.
Yeah.
So I, you know, it's amazing that even after 55 years, the story as to why Lazenby didn't continue on is still not, you know, completely straight. Some people blame it on other people. But everyone seems to point to Lazenby's agent, which is a guy named Rowan O'Rahilly, I believe is how you say it. And even Mr. Rahilly, who went on to have, you know, a perfectly nice career as an agent, kind of owns up to it and says that he thought that with the oncoming wave of, you know, societal change, both in America and Britain, that James Bond was old hat. And they wanted to sort of angle this guy as somebody that could be, you know, kind of the forefront of that and not James Bond. And so apparently Mr. Rahilly talked Lazenby out of it, basically violating the contract. Now, Lazenby, being a grown man, went along with it. He could have said, you know, no, you're crazy. But when I hear that, I say, first of all, Mr. Rahilly, you know, you should get out of the agent business for doing that.
Yeah.
Secondly, I don't think that's an agent's job, right? Yeah. That's not an agent. I don't know. Maybe I don't know anything about being a Hollywood agent, but I would think that
if he was new to the industry, maybe he put a lot of faith in somebody who he thought was going to steer his career.
I guess, but I mean, to me, it's like, isn't an agent's job just to sort of field the offers? Maybe that's what a manager does. I would just think you wouldn't have an agent who's like, you just landed this and I'm going to talk you out of it now. That just seems like, you know, and so Lazenby went along with it. And apparently he showed up for the premiere of this film with long hair and a mustache and a beard, looking very hippie like, and he just went totally all in on the hippie lifestyle, and he pissed off the Broccolis, and that's what led to that. And that's why we end up with one film. And it is just one of the great all time. Yeah. What were you thinking?
Kind of
moves. Oh, by the way, here's one of the few gadgets is this thing.
The
little randomizer.
I love this thing. Can I tell you about this? Why I love this thing? Because although I have said on Her Majesty's Secret Service is one of the greatest Christmas-based action movies ever made, this scene is not particularly action-packed in that there's no dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Bond basically breaks into an office, cracks a safe, reads a Playboy, and does some photocopying and gets out.
I love it. I love how mundane it is.
And you might go, that's not a great action sequence. The heavy lifting the music does in this is immense, because it just ratchets up the tension so beautifully. It just starts really quiet, ticking away, and it gets faster and faster and faster, and you get the ominous strings playing underneath. I think this is an absolute masterclass in movie scoring, and I love this scene, because although nothing on the face of it is happening and he's sitting reading a magazine, actually everybody knows that he's up against the clock. I love this scene. And by the way, the guy in the I don't know if he works for Draco, because he's on the construction site, but that is an actor called Bernard Horsfall, and he has a big part in Doctor Who, because he plays a character, a recurring Time Lord character called Chancellor Goth, who's in lots of different ones. So yeah, he's passed away not that long ago, I think. But that's his big BBC TV credit, is Doctor Who.
By the way, I love that the Playboy is buried inside the newspaper.
Yeah,
I think that was a fun detail. Like, it's whoever's in the office wanted to sneak a Playboy in his office, but he had to bury it in the newspaper. I love that Bond finds it. He picks up the newspaper, and then he's kind of like, you know, he can feel how stiff it is, and he pulls out the Playboy. I thought this is the fun little gag of somebody burying their porn
respectable lawyer hiding their softcore porn inside a very respectable
and
cheap newspaper. By the way, Diana Rigg here, and I noticed, because I've watched this movie quite a few times in the last week or so in preparation, this is getting towards the last time we see Diana Rigg for a very long time.
Yes, that's right.
She is wearing a very striking, very 60s yellow check outfit. And the next time we see her, which is a significant way through the movie from here on in, she is also wearing a very striking mustard yellow outfit. So there's a bit of visual continuity there all the way back.
I didn't even notice that. That's terrific. Yeah,
I hadn't noticed it, and I've watched this movie more than I can tell you. And it's only watching it several times you go, oh, yeah, it's real similarities. Not in the style of the outfit, but in the colour of the outfit. So it's a bit of a kind of throwback to when you last see her, which is just about now.
It took me, I don't know how many times, 4 or 5 times through this film before I finally understood the plot. There's so much in this film, and there's so many beats to it. That after a while, I would be okay. That happens with James Bond. I'm just like, I don't even really know what's going on. And that's fine. I don't know what this thing is. It doesn't matter, you know, but it didn't bother me. You know what I mean? You're just like, okay, but it's a Draco construction there. But yeah, it wasn't until a bunch of times that I went, oh, okay, this is this, you know, it all, like you said, this is a big meal, you know, I mean, just kind of when you think the film's over. I love that he brought the Playboy with him, the centerfold with him. That's a funny guy. He likes this girl. We never quite get to see. I mean, you could see the cover very prominently, so you could find that issue if you wanted to. But I love that old timey elevator. I mean, back then it wasn't old timey. Now it would be old timey, but do buildings still kind of look like that in England? Have they in America? We're sort of constantly tearing things down to make them look new and modern, but stuff like that. Like, do those elevators,
Switzerland, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, yeah, I think you're right. European cities generally hang on to their heritage a bit better than American ones. Yeah. I think generally speaking.
Yes.
So yeah, you know, like I live close to the city of Bath, which is a Georgian city, and there are so many listed buildings, you know, even if you own one, you can't change it. So, so I think we're more conscious of our architectural heritage, shall we say. But that's just a difference between European and American psyche, isn't it? Americans all about the new a lot of the time.
Yep. Great. And now we're in M's office. I love that Bond knows a little bit about butterfly collecting, you know.
I looked it up. Nymphalis polychlorus is a large tortoise shell, which actually is not that unusual of a British butterfly, actually. So quite why M is quite so intent on something which you can just see in the garden all the time. It's not like it's a rare one.
Forgive my ignorance, and maybe you don't know, but like, how do you collect butterflies? Do you just wait for them to drop dead and then get them? Because I would think you would not want to kill them, because if you love butterflies, the last thing we'd want to do is kill one of them and to put in your collection. It seems to kind of go against the whole idea of how these things are so beautiful. I'm going to kill it and put it under glass.
I don't know whether there are butterfly farms that, you know, breed them to allow them to pass away, because they have to be sort of pinned out with their wings out, don't they?
Yeah.
So I have no idea.
Okay. I love, by the way, the vastness of this set, just that establishing shot that we came in. Like, it's huge. I mean, these massive, massive sets.
Yeah, yeah. So now, I've walked past the College of Arms. It's very close to St. Paul's Cathedral, as you can see.
Oh, wow.
Establishing shot. And if you're in London and you visit Tate Modern, you can walk across the Millennium Bridge, the pedestrian bridge, and you come out right by the College of Arms. So that was absolutely the building. The exterior shot, I'm sure.
Very cool.
That we're in now. But
Now here is actor George Baker playing Hilary Bray. He had a long, long career. Anytime an actor from one of my favorite things of all time, I, Claudius, shows up in something else, I get excited. And he is Tiberius, in which he's one of the main characters in I, Claudius. And he is, of course, as we just said, he played Tiberius. He's villainous and loathsome and a pervert and all sorts of things in that. And he's great. And here he's the opposite of that. And on the audio commentary that actually accompanies the Blu-ray of this film, he's on it. And he tells a story that he said at some point the Broccolis had gone to him to maybe play James Bond. And it, now who knows whether that's true or not, but he says it was. And then it kind of just, it never quite happened. I don't think
he read was that Ian Fleming thought that George Baker was the ideal candidate to be James
interesting.
Bond in the first film, but because he had prior commitments, the role went to Connery.
Oh wow! Okay,
so if you get the okay from Ian Fleming, you're doing something right, aren't you? And I would like to point out that he's been in Doctor Who,
of course,
full circle, of course,
of course, of course. I mean,
and he does the voiceover for Lazenby when he is pretending to be Hilly.
Yep.
So Hilary Bray in Switzerland. So he kind of does play James Bond, but
a little bit, yeah. He gets close.
Voiceover only.
Yep. Now there we just saw there's a newsstand that this guy's in front of. I'm always looking for comic books on the newsstands, but I don't think we see any here. By the way, there's Ilsa Stepat as Irma. Real blunt there. This is her last movie, actually. This is her only English language film and her final film. And she actually died just a couple of weeks after the film premiered.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. She got to see it. She got to see it finished. But and of course, she, you know, memorable. She delivers arguably the greatest blow against James Bond that anybody ever gets to deliver. Yeah.
Now, why do the goons have the Olympic rings on their jackets? and did the Olympic Committee know?
That
because they're usually very hot.
They are, they're really specific about their copyright. That's a good question. Hard to believe that the Bond films could get away with not clearing it because it would be so noticed. But at the same time, you would think, well, we don't want them. We don't want a killer goon to wear our international trademark,
firing rifles at people. I mean, they're good skiers, so they might be okay with that. But now Bernard Horsfall is back here again in a very lovely jumper. but he's standing by the newsagent stand. There's an advert for something called Tobler Rum. And I don't know what Tobler Rum is. I'm hoping it's sort of boozy Toblerone. I've never.
It sounds like it
before.
Would be a Toblerone. I mean, what
great.
Else could
it
be?
It sounds like a perfect, you know, Christmas drink.
Candy bar with a little hint of rum in it?
A little bit of, hello. I think we need to do more research on this. And they're in this fantastic mismatch of the worst car chase in the world. In that they're in a two-horse open sleigh, and he's in
a VW
Beetle, which looks like an outcut from Herbie Goes Fondue.
But could you not? Could you have a worse car to try to make it up a snowy mountain than the horsepower challenged VW Bug? You would want a Jeep. You would want. He looks great. By the way, look, he looks great here. I love him with I don't know what that piece of whatever that clothing is. It's like kind of a cape kind of thing that he's got.
It's got a name, hasn't it? That half cape thing.
Yeah,
I'm going to look it up now.
He looks a little Sherlock Holmesy.
Yeah.
It's a little, like, you know.
Very nice little horn-rimmed glasses, hasn't he? They're quite cool.
Yeah, I love it. He said Lazenby looks comfortable in those clothes. Yeah. He looks comfortable in all these different outfits. And again, I don't know if that's necessarily, and not every actor can do, you know, again, yeah. I think it's because he was used to that. Yeah. I can't relate to the level of confidence it would take to have never been an actor. And then you finally go for a role and you go for James Bond.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just no can't, pressure. I don't live in that world where I would have even 2% of that level of confidence. I just don't like, how do you go through life? I guess you just figure I'll try. And if they give me the job, then they must see, you know, they know what they're doing. They're Eon Productions, you know, but I just can't, it's like, hey, Rob, do you want to act with us? No, but what do you want me to do? How about Batman? Like, what? What are you talking about? Yeah. You know?
Do you know what? I think the paycheck probably helps, doesn't it?
I'm sure. This
helicopter ride is such a good advert for Switzerland. It is absolutely beautiful, isn't it? There's some stunning, stunning scenery here. And we also are getting little precursors of things like avalanches and cable cars and, bobsleigh runs and things like that. So
Have you been to Switzerland?
Not only, Rob, have I been to Switzerland, I have been to Piz Gloria.
Really?
I have, yeah. So I have been skiing twice in my life. I can't say that I enjoyed it a whole lot, but the first time in the sort of mid-1990s, I visited this very building.
Oh my.
And it is, the story is that this was under construction in 1969, and this film helped to finance the construction of it on the deal that they had exclusive filming rights. And so this, where we're the Alpine Room, where a lot of the action happens, is this revolving restaurant. And it genuinely does rejoice. It costs a bomb to eat there. So I didn't actually eat there, but I've been up that very narrow, windy little staircase. It's very much as you see it.
Wow. You never told me that. That's fantastic. Well, you waited till we did the commentary to let me know that.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
The armed guards were not there. It is not a private weird allergy institute. It's just a tourist attraction and a restaurant. But
had you seen this film by the time you went there?
I think I might have done, but I think it might have been at this point that I kind of went, okay, this is now my favorite Bond film because I've been to the set.
Gotcha. Okay. It was reverse engineered kind of thing. That makes total sense. You know, I mean, if they had made a James Bond film with a Joe Kubert skull, I would have been like, wow, my God, I've been there. That's so cool. The shootout in the gym. That's great. You know, so I get it. That's so cool. I sound like such a dummy. I'm going to say this. How do you build this?
I have no idea because it's really high up.
How do you, where do you, you can't possibly go up every day and deliver stuff to the you know, construction material. So it means you have to live up there. Where do you live if there's nothing there? I don't understand how you do it.
Yeah. I guess the answer is you do it in the summer, but it's still really high. And I can't imagine there wasn't some sort of snow. And I think you have to helicopter stuff up. But I did go on the ultimate authority Wikipedia to ask to see if there was anything about how was this constructed, and there's nothing, but I think it must be astronomically expensive. If you're in Switzerland, Piz Gloria, and Piz Gloria, it was called Piz Gloria because in the Ian Fleming novel of this film, that's what he called it, and they appropriated the name from the book.
Oh my God! Wow, that's
and there's a James Bond exhibition in the building because of the money, and of course it drives the tourists because it was in the movie. So
of course. Why? How could you not? I mean, this is. By the way, we got a couple seconds ago. We got our first shot of Blofeld, the new Blofeld. Yeah. We saw him played by Telly Savalas. I'll say this about the I love Donald Pleasance, great actor. He is to me he's kind of the iconic Blofeld, probably mostly due to Mike Myers. His Dr. Evil is he's not doing the Telly Savalas Blofeld, he's doing the Donald Pleasance Blofeld, even though he's doing a Lorne Michaels voice, but he's kind of playing the Donald Pleasant version. But the thing I like about this Blofeld is that he is a man of action. The Pleasant's Blofeld just sits in a chair and strokes the cat and is completely uncomfortable with getting involved in the action, which is, you know, fun on one level. But I like that this Blofeld gets out in the field. He goes out on skis and chases James Bond and gets in fights. And, you know, I like that he's not like a dilettante, you know.
He's a bobsleigh. Like,
yeah, he does lots of stuff. I love all this. So,
yeah,
this looks like the honeymoon suite that Superman and Lois visited in Superman 2.
It's very retro chic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's.
Again, I don't know how you build this. You carry the stuff up on a helicopter and then what? You sit it there and you go back every day. I mean, just how much time would you lose on a day getting your crew
just
up there
up and stuff down
before you hammer the first nail? You know, I don't understand. And who owns it? Like who, like the government, I guess, owns the mountain, right? Is that how it works? Like you can't just build there. You have to like get permission.
When you win the lottery, when you win the lottery and have your Swiss bank account, then maybe you can buy an Alp.
Maybe so. I would never do that. It's too cold. I would do it. I would build it in a tropical location. I would not build it in a snowy location.
Okay.
I would.
Does New Jersey have much skiing action, Rob?
I went skiing one time. I hated it. I don't like being cold. I don't like being wet. And that's all that skiing was falling down. Finding myself my ass in my pants wet with wet snow. It was just, this is the worst experience I've ever had. I'll never do it again. Okay. So
here we are in the Alpine room.
Yep. Bond looking great in his traditional Scottish kilt.
Yeah. That very noticeable sort of metal screen with the circles. They've absolutely had that when I was there.
Oh, wow.
So it's all very 60s and, if you look in the background as they talk, you will see the tables kind of gently rotating around, and that's the rotating restaurant. So you can get your panoramic view of the Alps going past.
Amazing. Just amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Also amazing is this harem of women that we've got here.
Blofeld's Angels of Death.
Yeah. I love that they're all different. They're all in different outfits.
Yeah.
They're all of different, somewhat nationalities. You know, this is just a collection of absolutely gorgeous women that are all fawning over James Bond here. It's like, oh my God. Yeah.
So there's a couple of British actors. Joanna Lumley.
Joanna Lumley is probably the most famous.
From the Avengers as well. Ruby Bartlett, who says she's from Lancashire, but she's the poshest Lancashire lady you've ever met.
What does that mean? I don't know what that means. I know what part.
She's got a very cut glass accent.
Oh, okay.
Lancashire is a much more northern accent than that.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
I think Andy Leyland might be from Lancashire. So if you hear what Andy sounds like, then I think he might be from Lancashire.
I have to say, just as my own personal preference, that redhead, that's the one that's really doing it for me. And she doesn't really get to
Fraulein
talk much.
Bunch. Fraulein Bunch, you mean? She's a redhead.
Yeah. Oof. Ah.
A baggy part of a sail, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Okay.
You're right, though, that the montage with Tracy, this is odd that he's sort of fallen in love with her, and yet he's going to do his traditional James Bond thing, which is flirt with all these beautiful women. And, of course, he's going to bed one of them down. Which kind of goes cuts across.
He's sort of playing gay, isn't he? But he can't say it because it's 1969. So he's they're all alluding to the fact that he's not really interested.
Well, but he will show that he is interested, certainly very shortly. and so he's kind of going against that a little. That's the only, if they had sort of fallen in love with Tracy after this, he might not have been quite so like, oh, he just sort of casual. I mean, again, him and Tracy are not in a committed relationship. They haven't, but the film is trying. She's suggestively eating the chicken. I find disgusting. So, it's just doing nothing for me, by the way, but okay.
Trying to be seductive with a big old greasy chicken.
Yeah. That's not doing it
not
for
working,
me.
Yeah.
I love the bun. That girl's got the hair bun there. Oh, she's going to put her hands on Bond's leg in a moment. Here, see, they're all like, there's an African woman. There's an Asian woman. Okay. Yeah. Very, very mixed group here. This is great.
Yeah.
I love these down shots too. This is fun. Like all these,
yeah.
All the, again, this is not something he typically saw in James Bond films. So again, it's kind of just camera angles that call attention to themselves. And some directors would say what's the point? What's the point of having a pretty shot for its own sake? But this is meant to be a mass entertainment. We're not making high art here. I mean, and that's great. I mean, there's room for everything in cinema. And this is just meant to be entertaining. And so why not? Why not have some shots that just,
it's artier than a Bond film needs to be, but it's enriched by the fact that it is.
Yeah.
That you get those kind of slightly more artistic shots. And I'm sure if you're the director, you're wanting to slide a little bit of that in somewhere, aren't you?
Yeah, you want to, sure.
Just for a bit of something a little bit different. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right. You want to, oh, here we go. Now she's going to. Now there's a rumor, it's on IMDb and, you know, caveat emptor on that stuff. But apparently during one take, they put a little gag thing down there for that actress to grab, and she didn't know it was supposed to be there. And it was like some sort of like a fake, you know, some sort of sausage roll or something. Okay. Movies were different back then. They don't do movies like they can't get away with that now. This has been a long meal, by the way. It's dark out, They've been eating several hours.
He's been so just as the Alpine room was absolutely beautiful and set in the actual location, we now move to a cave, which could not be more obviously an internal set. With sort of papier-mâché rocks and things. It's not great, this cave. But then
there it is.
Yeah, there we go.
He's in the Batcave. Maybe it's just because I've gotten older and I've seen more films and whatever, but I sort of just get to appreciate the artificiality of it. Like, you know, it's fake, but you also are marveling that, like, God, guys built this. You know, they had how many guys with hammers and glue and nails and boards and just and now we're on this very high class elevator. I love the purple light that they went through for no really good reason. It just looks cool.
We've got this the most COVID secure apartment in the entire world. but it's this sort of very chic, sort of slightly Scandinavian looking 60s apartment onto this idea of what a lab looks like.
There you go. That he just took that from Dr. No. That is just totally the Dr. No lab. Yeah. They just moved it over. These Bond villains must have a network of flunkies that they hire and go from guy to guy, you know. Yeah. There he is. I love that purple light. It's great. There he is, Telly Savalas as Blofeld. Telly Savalas, you know, went on to greater fame after this as Kojak.
Oh, boy,
but he had just done The Dirty Dozen before this, which was a massive hit. So he was, he was a definite big name at this point.
They were surrounding Lazenby with real talent, weren't they? If you've got Diana Rigg as the love interest and Telly Savalas as the bad guy, then he was... They were propping him up with established talent, I think, weren't they?
Which is smart, you know. I mean, that makes sense. You know, like, okay, maybe we have to kind of paper over this guy's supposed deficiencies as an actor, but we can surround him with a great Bond girl and a great villain, and that'll get you through. And it does, you know. Yeah, I mean, it does. It really does.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, there are lots of films where. I review films over, not really review, it's more appreciate films over on 13dimension.com for my Real Retro Cinema column. And once in a while, I'll come across a movie where you say, man, this is a really great movie, but the center, there's nothing there. Like, the one I'm thinking about is Krull. Like, you've ever seen Krull?
Okay, I've heard of Krull. Yeah, I haven't seen
it. It's a really
type thing, isn't it?
It's a sci-fi fantasy film with a little bit of Conan mixed in. And it's really fun, except the two leads are, you know, sorry to these two actors, but the two leads are dull as dishwater. It's they're just ciphers, and you don't care. But it surrounds them with all this other fun stuff, and you say, "Boy, if they had just found a way to get a little bit of life into these leads, this film might have really had something." Yeah. And to me, that's what they did. Like Lazenby, the more I watch this film, the more I appreciate it. The more I'm like, "No, he does a really good job. He's not Connery, he's not Moore, but he would have grown into the gig." And I think he holds up really quite well here.
Yeah. I kind of think a little bit of the same with Timothy Dalton, who was up for Bond forever.
Yeah, he kept coming around. The wheel kept coming around to him. Yeah.
His first movie, I think, is really good. I think he's on that sort of, harder end of Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second movie, they did him such a massive disservice. And I'm not surprised that he didn't, wasn't offered any more, because it just was not a great film. But he had such potential in it. And that, I think he is a terrific actor. He's been great.
We
talked about him in Hot Fuzz, didn't we? And, he's done so much good stuff since. But I think he was wasted as James Bond after, what was it called? His second
License movie? To Kill was License the second to one. Kill, yeah.
Yeah.
He got hosed on that. He really did. Yeah. Because then there was, I think, a writer's strike, and then there was a copyright issue, and it kept not copyright, but a legal issue with the producers, and it kept Bond off screen. And it was so long that they just decided, let's just start over. But that wasn't Dalton's fault,
No.
I love that shot. I love he gets that shock there. It looked great. I think I said
close as we get to a gadget in this film.
Yeah, that's true.
A pencil eraser and a hacksaw blade. A bulldog clip.
I am sure I said this on our Octopussy commentary. I probably even said it on our Hot Fuzz commentary, and I'll say it again because I just want to manifest it into happening. Before they start a new run on Bond, they hire a new actor, and we'll talk about that later on, but what we want to see for the next set of Bonds. I would love for them to give Dalton one more movie as old Bond. Because he is still incredibly charming. He's still very, very handsome. I mean, in the commentary for Hot Fuzz, Edgar Wright talks about that when Dalton was there to shoot, all the women on the set of every age was like, oh, where's Timothy here? I would love to see old, retired, come out of retirement, doesn't give an F, James Bond. I think that would be funny and charming, and it would give Dalton kind of like a nice goodbye. They'll never do it. There's just too much at stake for the Bond franchise now, but I wish they would give Dalton one more bite at that apple.
Yeah. I would. I think I said this on the previous one. I'd like to see him come back as M. Actually, I think he'd be like a good
That would be great. That would be, yeah. I think he'd be a
terrific
great.
M. And you don't have to renege the I was Bond once. He can still have been Bond, and now I'm M. I think that would work.
Oh, no, here we go. See, now
can I just point out my medical duties to point out that nothing in this film about allergy is correct.
Hard to believe. This is all just Falderall.
Allergies are not psychological. Let's just get that out there. You can't cure allergies with hypnotism.
I don't think so. Yeah, well, there's a lot of dubious science here. I mean, earlier Blofeld talked about the hawk noses of the Habsburg lips and the hawk noses of the Medicis. It's like there's a lot of like almost phrenology going on here. That's not.
Yeah.
But so I love that this woman has seen right through him. She's like, you're funny at pretending that you don't like, she's the kind of nose like, you can't, and you kind of can't. I don't know. I mean, think about the acting challenge presented to George Lazenby here, right? He's James Bond. This is George Lazenby here as a little dick joke. There we go. So it's George Lazenby pretending to be James Bond, pretending to be Hilary Bray, pretending to be gay. there's a lot
of
levels.
At least bisexual.
Or at least bisexual. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of levels here. There's a lot of pretending, So this is the only part of this. I'm like, he fell in love with Teresa. Now he's doing this. I mean, this is what Bond does, but it's just a little, they could have moved this around. But that's all right. It's James. I mean, he's gonna wisen up and realize he probably really connect. Maybe he's not, he's James Bond. He probably doesn't trust his own feelings about falling in love with anybody.
Yeah, well, he just does what he needs to do to get the job done. And if that's sleep with beautiful ladies, then so be it. It's a tough gig, you know.
Now here, we just that shot of him with the lights. This, you know, one of the nods to sort of 60s psychedelia, you know, with that kind of expecting Jefferson Starship to start playing.
Yeah. And Blofeld loading cassette tapes in, multiple cassettes. That was the height of audio technology, those little cassettes.
Ka-chunk, would have been, ka-chunk,
you know, a 78 LP.
Yeah.
I think his hypnotic voice here is very, very good, but I got little whiffs of Donald Trump in this sort of.
Oh, monologue. Please don't.
It was a bit weird.
Please don't. Please, just don't invoke that. I do my best to just not have. I want to live in a world where that's not a thing, and my podcasts are one of those things. Yeah. It's just that it just doesn't exist in this world, and I'm happier there. A great shot. I love this shot. Love this shot of the ceiling over him with the multicolor light. Just looks so, look at that. It looks great. Checking. Blofeld's run about talking about the chickens is just one of the most strange, odd. What is happening in this James Bond film? There he's all right. He's suited back up. I hope he got a shower because, no, he doesn't have time. No time for shower.
We get the sexy lady music, don't we? That bit.
So okay, I mentioned it earlier, and we can stop if we need to. But like Bond 26, like what do you want to see? Do you want to see, and what kind of Bond are you looking for now that the Daniel Craig era is over?
I want a rollicking good story, really, is what I want. A bit of escapism. Who do I want for Bond?
I don't know about that. I don't think anybody can answer that because they'll just find somebody that's unknown. I mean,
I think it's somebody that can balance that. You know, like I say, I think what Daniel Craig did really well was that, and I think Roger Moore sort of slightly slipped a little bit too comedic, and Pierce Brosnan possibly a little bit too comedic. I think you've got to get that tension between. This guy is meant to be a killer, licensed to kill, but he has got a bit of humor to him. And I think if you want to, you know, they've got to be able to do the action-y stuff. And I think you've got to believe that they are ruthless, but I think they've also got to have that humor and that slightly softer side as well. Because if it's just, you know, you wouldn't want to spend company in somebody who is basically a state assassin for very long, because they're not going to be very nice people. So they've got to be an appealing thing. And that's what they do, isn't it? They layer on other stuff, you know, to sort of slightly distract you from the fact that Bond is basically a murderer. You know, so they have nice cars and, you know, fancy gadgets. And, you know, he's a connoisseur of all things, including butterflies. You know, they layer all that stuff on to make him a bit more charming and a bit more appealing, not just cold. So I think it's somebody that's got to get that balance, really. I'm not sure. Have you heard any names that?
No, I have. No, I mean, obviously they.
I haven't heard any.
By the way, I love that font. You could say the Intrat Verboten. I just love that font. I don't know what that font is. It's just very, very classic.
That's what
font.
People come to these podcasts for.
font talk. I can say I'm a graphic designer. Yeah. Love a good font.
Cool.
You know, the Bond producers have even said this, that post Austin Powers, they're afraid to go too funny because then it becomes like Austin Powers. And that's not something.
And I think that for a director, that's the thing. It can easily go parody, can't it? And it absolutely can't. It's a bit like, you know, didn't they say to Adam West, you know, you have to be able to play Batman 66 like it's Shakespeare. And if you can't come in with that level of seriousness, you have to sell this utterly ridiculous premise to an audience like it's completely serious. And I think it's the same with Bond. You know, you could go very silly. And well, they did, didn't they? You know, there was the original Casino Royale with Woody Allen.
And Peter Sellers, Orson Welles.
You know,
that's a
craziness. So you could do that, but it's not what we think of as a Bond film.
Right.
So, you know, by all means, do Austin Powers and be shagadelic. But, you know, that's a separate thing. And Bond's got to be its own thing. It's got to be, it's interesting, isn't it? It's sort of carved its own niche.
Yeah, I mean, the Craig Bonds are the first Bonds post Austin Powers. So they have that. No other Bond had that to contend with. And then they did. And they obviously decided to go way the other way and make it very heavy and very interconnected. Those five films, you know, are basically one giant storyline, which is unusual for the James Bond films. That said, and I thought they did it great. I thought Daniel Craig was a great James Bond. I liked him. I think the films got a little bit out of focus in the last two. I just think they got too big. And I would love to see them lighten up in the next. I think you can't get darker. I mean, I don't want them to go darker. I mean, for God's sakes. But I, you know, I appreciate that they don't want it to be too funny. But I think just as a difference to Craig, you got to come up with somebody who just, it's just lighter. They're just, and then, you know, not that the Austin Powers film, good Lord, those films are 20 years old at this point anyway. And so it's not even in really much of the popular consciousness anymore. So just say, let's find something else, you know, find somebody else.
How do you feel about a non-British actor? Because there was some talk, wasn't there, about, was Sam Neill in the running for Bond at one point?
He was,
years ago,
Would
can
my
Bond be American?
No. My argument is he can be, he's got it. It can be a woman, and it can be an African American, or not an African American. It can be a person of color, let's say. But he can't be American. He's a British guy. He's a British guy. Yeah. The minute you hire, you know, an American actor, and then they did. They went to like John Gavin at some point, apparently, before they went on Lazenby, and they talked to Burr Reynolds. It would have been disastrous. It's,
and of course,
you haven't
mentioned that Lazenby is Australian.
You're right. That's true. Yeah. That is true. He's not a British guy here.
Playing,
yeah.
But he's definitely playing British, isn't he?
Yeah. But to me, it's got to be
Fedora.
A British guy. He's a part of the British culture, and it should remain that way. So, Although, we're seeing here, he's not British. So, you know, okay. I mean, Sam Neill would have been, a really interesting James Bond.
Yeah.
Had they gone that way, right? I don't know when they were thinking of him.
Yeah.
Probably post-Moore, I'm guessing. He would have been probably around the right age at that point.
Yeah.
He was busy playing.
We're coming up to the massive plot twist here.
Yep.
This is where everything changes. We're obviously getting, did I mention this is the greatest Christmas action movie ever made, Rob?
You have said that, yes.
We're now getting to Christmas because we have Christmas trees up around the place. We know it's Christmas.
Oh, there you are, some tinsel there above the door. It never occurred to me, Chris, that this is in fact a Christmas set movie. I never really even thought about it.
Yeah. And you know, they had to get that Christmas tree and all the decorations. We're talking about, you know, how do you build Piz Gloria? But, you know, that Christmas tree had to come through the cave and get disinfected, same as everything else.
Oh, Irma. Now that shot I don't like. The slow-mo of him falling, looking kind of smiley. That's kind of goofy. Why did they use that take? They should have just had him. I don't know. I am generally not a fan of slow-mo in movies. I just find slow-mo to be, it takes you out of the film. You know, you're like, oh, now I'm looking at footage that's been, there's some exceptions. The Indy tossing the date in the air before Salah catches it is a great exception, but generally not a fan of the slow-mo. Now, this is something that you mentioned, when I win the lottery and I build a, you know, mountaintop retreat, I would absolutely.
Your evil genius lair.
Yeah, I absolutely would build secret panels that open up and they lower things down like that. I would get that stuff made.
Oh,
I would have some electricians come in and you press a button and the pinball machine comes out on a turntable, you know, and you can play that stuff.
Yeah, the tabletop spins over, you know, panels draw back to reveal your map of the world where you're, you know.
My movie screen, my personal movie screen of my personal movie theater. That's absolutely what I would do. I would retreat from the world if I was a billionaire. I would not want to engage myself more. The opposite. I mean, I don't understand these billionaires.
Fun.
I don't understand these guys. They make all this money and they're like, all right, let me drag my name through the mud by allowing Nazis back on my social media platform. I just don't get it. I don't get these people. And now we can talk about foot and mouth disease. Remember that foot and mouth disease last summer?
Yeah.
What is that? What is foot and mouth disease, by the
way? Foot and mouth? it's nasty. It's a disease of cattle, which they get very sick and they have to be destroyed. There was a foot and mouth outbreak in the UK in 2001. And in fact, it was a very big deal because I work in rural practice. And when we were doing house visits, we had to disinfect our shoes and stuff going onto farmhouses when we were doing home visits. So yeah, it's wow. Nasty, very nasty. Yeah, real terrible. Yeah, very, very what? Infectious and very nasty disease of cattle.
Is it because that's how it's communicated? Is foot and like why foot and mouth? Like what does that even mean?
Because it affects the feet and the mouth of the creatures. Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay. All right. Yeah. It sounds horrible.
Not to be mistaken with hand, foot, and mouth, which is a viral illness in kids and which is really quite benign. But there's foot and mouth for cattle and there's hand, foot, and mouth for kids. And hand, foot, and mouth scares parents greatly because it sounds so similar. But actually, it's a relatively benign viral illness in kids that we see all the time, especially this time of year.
Hmm. It's funny. I just watched a film about a month ago, HUD, with Paul Newman. Uh-huh. And that foot and mouth is a plot point in that film because they're cattle ranchers and a bunch of the cows get sick and Paul Newman's character hides that is selling the meat anyway and it becomes like a whole plot. So it's strange that it's not something that I really run into in my life and yet I've now seen it mentioned twice.
There you go. Foot and mouth disease, according to the Wikipedia oracle, is an infectious and sometimes fatal viral disease that affects cloven-hoofed animals, including domestic and wild bovids. The virus causes a high fever lasting 2 to 6 days, followed by blisters inside the mouth and near the hoof that may rupture and cause lameness. Very nasty.
Oh my. There you go. That does sound terrible.
Infectious. So,
this is a great reveal here of the guy, Campbell, hanging upside down, dead.
Yeah, poor Bernard Horsfall. Terrible way to go.
I love the effort they made, right? Blofeld made to hang him out there just to make this reveal. That's a lot of effort. Go
the
get
Ravens
that.
To pick out his eyes and nasty. He's gets a nasty his, piece of work, Blofeld.
Gets his henchmen to go out there, hang him up.
He's not the benign immunologist that he likes us to think he is.
Hard to believe Telly Savalas is not benign. It's funny because Telly Savalas, really played a lot of. But this set is great. All the gears of this, I love it. It kind of looks like James Bond has been miniaturized, and he's fallen inside of a game or something, or like a watch because it's got
like
all the
Land of the Giants. Type thing.
Totally.
Yeah,
this is now we're coming up to really one of the great here. I love that matte painting there. It looks like Luke when he's on Bespin or something with these, impossibly cleaning deep chambers. On. I'm just such a huge fan of like the matte painting. These people that could do these paintings that had to look great and be shown on 70 foot screens and still hold up and look.
It's a lost art with.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. It was funny. I was just watching a film the other day and I saw David Fincher's name come by as one of the matte paintings. Which one is it? Is it Temple of Doom? It's one of the Raiders, one of the Indiana Jones films. He did the matte paintings on that. And it's just fun to like, wow. Yeah. Look, that's the level of talent they're working with. A future renowned directors is doing their matte painting. It's amazing.
Yeah, and the sound effect does a lot of work. He drops his thing down and
the
metal takes forever to hit the floor.
Yeah. This looks like it would hurt just having your... Oh, there he almost falls into the thing where he's going to get crushed. Yeah, I mean, this is... there are a lot of bad action movies and it's because I think a lot of times they're not well directed. They just think, you just blow stuff up and that's good enough. No, you have to have some tension. You have to have to set it up in a way that there is clear stakes. And this is, I love how he's right in between those giant wheels turning. I mean, he's got very little room to make any sort of error here.
Yeah.
Yeah. hands are probably full of oil. He just like smacked his hands in there. Yeah, they're probably greasy.
Yeah.
He's gonna pull out his own pockets there and use them as gloves. Love it again.
That's a gadget in this.
Yeah, very low end gadget.
The gadget budget was really low.
Yeah, Bond is like, God, give me an Aston Martin that has a that can go underwater. Now this is, you know, very, very Batman like, where he's scaling across that wire here.
Yes.
Well, the girls are now falling asleep.
Yeah. And that's great, isn't it? The contrast between the Technicolor girls.
Yep.
And the very monochrome. You just get these little glints of yellow from the machinery. But yeah,
it's all just black, blue, basically.
Yeah.
The more I watch this, the more I go, man, Peter Hunt, he just did not get a break. That's just not fair. The guy's he's under cranking the camera just a little bit before he's gonna, I mean, not actually quite a bit there. You kind of notice it, but look at that. He's hanging on to I don't even know what he's hanging on to either. Now, this is funny. He falls onto that ledge and he's grabbing the metal. Actually, that's probably the sock gloves, the pocket gloves, probably not what you want at that point, because now he's extra slippy.
They're not really helping, are they?
Yeah. He's managed, there's a little bit of some edges he can grab, but I love that he sits there for a moment. I mean, it's great. He just kind of rests. Like, okay. And that's something else too. You know, I find like, I know I'm being an old man yelling at cloud, but I feel like action movies now are just one set piece after the other, and they don't give you a chance to take a breather and, you know, pace yourself and move on to the next thing. And this is, has a little bit of that. Like, okay, just, all right, look, we can just have a moment of downtime. I mean, we're cutting back to the women too that are asleep. That's part of it. Yeah. But.
And you're sort of the story with the women is progressing whilst he's trying to do this. And the danger here is not an explosion, and it's not somebody shooting at you, and it's not even another human being. The danger here is gravity and being crushed by these absolutely massive cogwheels. And, you know, the tension couldn't be higher. You know, it's not. You don't need the explosions and the car chases. You just need.
Look at that. Yeah. It's great. Just that shot of it coming up. And it's about to run over his hand, and then he's going to jump at the.
And if you ever worry about your fingers being crushed, you know, I think that must be, those wheels are getting awfully close.
And he's going to just, and then jumps to the lower.
I'm never quite sure that the physics of that jump really were.
No, right. He kind of fell diagonally, which he would
fell
not
forward
do.
Into the cable car, didn't he?
Now, would those wheels, do you think, not to be grotesque, but would those wheels crush your fingers or cut them off? Would the sheer force of it just sever them?
I think they would just sever
them. So you would just fall. Yeah. Well, you'd fall either way because your fingers would be crushed.
Doesn't bear thinking about.
Always one guard, just kind of tired of this job.
Peeking over the he's having a very dull evening on guard duty, isn't he?
So no, I will not say that I ever did anything as exciting as visit this place. But the most recent example I can think of is that they have a cafe at the Golden Gate Bridge, at the foot of the Golden Gate Bridge, with a glass. with glass walls, and you can sit and just look at the Golden Gate Bridge. And when my wife and I went to California for our honeymoon, we went to San Francisco and we took a tour, and it stopped at the Golden Gate Bridge, and you could do that. And we had a wonderful, I think he had like a scone or something and some tea sitting in front of this glass wall, looking at the Golden Gate Bridge. And it was really quite lovely.
Sounds lovely.
Great. And of course, the James Bond film has taken place there.
Beautiful
Kill. So, you know.
Yeah. Can we just note that the girls' Christmas presents are wrapped in purple and green wrapping? And if comics teaches us anything, that is the colors of villainy. Isn't
it? Is green. This from the Joker? Is this from Lex Luthor? Who is this from?
Yeah. Unless you're the Hulk. but right. You know, basically right. Purple and green equals right. Bad guy.
These are great little props. These little
yeah
little transmitter. Look at that. That's yeah. Great. And again, I hate to think that
doesn't it date it as a sort of late 60s walkie-talkie?
Because it does.
This would all be a mobile phone now. This would be an app.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Download the Blofeld app.
For all your allergy needs.
All yeah, your yeah. allergy needs down the Blofeld app. Oh, my God. Oh, he's like, oh, I got to have 3 special characters on my password. Oh, my God. This is such a pain in the ass. Exclamation mark. Yeah. Ampersand. I don't know. Oh my God. I don't remember Blofeld. What are you doing to me? Yeah. It would be funny. It's all just villains with their apps now. It's just so mundane. I hope those props are still somewhere. I hate to think that they just chucked them out and you know, somebody got the because they looks like they made at the very least a few of them.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah.
MGM is now owned by Amazon. So Amazon now Amazon doesn't have the rights to the James Bond. Well, no, they do. No, that you can, if you, the James Bond films are available on Amazon now for Amazon Prime for free. Okay. Well, not for free because Prime costs money, right. But it's not an add-on
part of the package,
but, I don't know. I don't know what, like who owns the actual, I mean, obviously the sets get destroyed, stuff like that, but the props, I like to think that the James Bond props are being cared for. Somewhere. I know they give some away to the actors and things like that, but I would love to have one of those little doohickeys. They're fun.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Another act. Great fight scene. Look at just the right there, right and there for 1 second.
Actors like to steal things as well, offset.
That too, they? Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now in this very brief fight scene that we just had, you saw it for a moment, Peter Hunt actually cut some frames out. With the guy that he's fighting actually leapt through space. In for like 2 frames, he was one part of the floor and there's another part of the floor. And I like to think, you know, it's like, what the hell? Just, you know, we got to speed this up. Let's just do that. But it's you literally see him kind of like, you know, bloop, bloop, back to another part of the floor.
More directors these days should try to keep their films under 2.5 hours. if they got to cut a few frames out, you go for it.
This film at two hours and 22 minutes is an exception, because I am now of the belief that films should be either 3 hours or 90 minutes. And that's it. No, nothing in between, because if it's 3 hours, it means you've earned it. It means you have such a story that you need to tell that you need 3 hours, whether it's Killers of the Flower Moon or Oppenheimer or Babylon, the 3 films I thought of that I saw this year that were in 2023 that are 3 hours plus, or cut your story down to the bone and give us 92 minutes. You know, the 2 hour, 20 minute runtime of like these most films now is like, oh my gosh, really? Yeah.
Well, or, you know, do a mad world and have an intermission.
I don't know why they don't do that. I enjoyed Killers of the Flower Moon. I saw it. My wife and I sat through all 3 hours and 20 minutes of it, but it wouldn't have killed it to have an intermission.
Yeah.
I hate the way Blofeld bumps the cat on the table there. This is great.
It's popped up on Apple TV, so I think it's going to be one of our holiday watches, but maybe not in one go. It might have to be an intermission.
It's a lot yeah. It's a lot to take in. Now see there, Blofeld suiting up.
Yeah,
he's not just telling those guys what to do. He's like, I'm gonna slap on. Look at, there he is, he's got his binoculars and his. I love the red light they're coming out of. That's terrific.
So the skiing scenes are either pretty obviously people swaying back and forth against the background, or the real stuff was either filmed by an Olympics level skier skiing backwards and filming, or they hooked a cameraman up to a parachute harness and dangled him outside of a helicopter to film the aerial shots. This was from the documentary on the DVD. Wow. And I think the skiing photography on this is pretty good. I mean, like I say, when you can actually see that it's Lazenby or Diana Rigg or Telly Savalas, clearly they are not going to be doing it themselves. But the rest of the stuff is amazing. As somebody speaking as, like you, Rob, not a skier, I think it's just incredible. And it feels, I mean, there was some skiing stuff in the Living Daylights, wasn't there? The first Dalton one.
There's some in For Your Eyes Only as well.
Yeah, I think this. Oh, yes. Where he, is that the one where he parachutes off the cliff at the very start?
No, that's Spy Who Loved Me.
Spy Who Loved Me.
But in For Your Eyes Only, there is a whole sequence where he's going, he's being chased and chasing on skis.
Yeah. But this looks terrific. This looks absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it looks marvelous. Sequence. How do you ski while firing a machine gun at the same time? You're not navigating. What have you done with your poles? If you're holding the machine gun with both hands, what have you done? Well, then, are you just stuck under your back?
Machine gun has recoil. So if you
relatively
low friction surface like snow,
you would just
the machine gun is flying backwards. Doesn't that send you?
I would think that would just knock you on your ass. Yeah, yeah. Well, you're going to lose a few on these. Yeah, if you lose a few henchmen on these excursions here.
Yeah.
I love that guy. Just hit the tree. I love Blofeld, idiot. Like, it was like, okay. I mean, you know, he's trying his best. Oh, and it bonds down to one ski.
Yeah. And then he uses that ski to take out a goon.
It's amazing to think how stuffed this movie is when you think about how much more, how many more scenes there are. And yet we are at the 1 hour and 35 minute mark of this film. I mean, like most other action movies would have one other set piece after this, and then that would be it. But no, we've got a whole other act.
We've got two plot twists to come yet, haven't we?
Oof, great fall. Close to one. Look at that. Wow. That was a long fall.
Yeah. You know, that cliff reminds me of a bit which Star Trek movie is it, where Kirk falls off the cliff and he's got his jet boots.
Star Trek 5.
Yeah. It's kind of that size of cliff that guy falls down.
There's always cliffs in action movies that you're like, wait, where did that come from? Like, all of a sudden they're on a 500-foot drop. You know, you're like, wait, how did that happens in Raiders too, where they knock the Nazis off the thing, and you're like, wait a minute, where are we here? Looked like we were in pretty flat geography, and all of a sudden there's this, you know, they're in the Grand Canyon or something. Yeah. What is happening? Yeah. Another fight? Box the guy. Yeah. And another guy gets pitched off the cliff.
Yeah.
This ravine has got like five orange suited Blofeld guys laying down there. You think Blofeld goes and gets them, right?
Just leaves them.
Bones. Let the crows get them, whatever you got. It's fine.
There might be a wolf.
They knew what they were getting into. They signed up to be a
happy Christmas lunch, wolves.
I liked Irma Blunt waving goodbye, like a kind of jovial. You know, bye. She's like a dead mother. It's like she's a paid assassin. Yeah.
I think we should talk about the logistics of this, because this is clearly Christmas Eve. It's stated that it's Christmas Eve. How are these girls getting home? There are no scheduled flights. You know, the airports are going to be a nightmare. No, not on. I mean, it's dark, isn't it? So let's be generous. It's, you know, 4 o'clock in the evening on Christmas Eve. How are these girls getting home for Christmas? Unless Blofeld's laid on a fleet of private Spectre jets.
Maybe he has.
You know? Maybe he has.
There's a bunch of jets with their evil Spectre logo on the tail. Yeah. Great.
What is the in-flight service like on Spectre Airlines, do you think?
And another fight.
Another fight. This very low-key fight in, you know,
I love all the bells. All the bells
ninja
banging
like
around.
In a cowbell storage facility. Very discreet fight.
Yeah, this is great. Great. Now, they said in the commentary, that is not a set that they built. They just found this on this location, and they were like, "Wow!" Then let's put a fight scene in here. That's great. You know, it's just sort of a
fantastic. Well, what could be more Swiss?
So, as you said, there's been no Tracy for 40 minutes of this film. Like she's, and then she's about to resurface. But yeah, you almost kind of forget about her a little bit. You know, you're gotten caught up in the story and you're like, okay, well, that part had.
We've got all the allergy clinic and the what Blofeld's planning and all of that stuff is going on. And it's what makes this spoiler reveal of Diana Rigg coming up to be absolutely impactful because it does such a good job of making you forget her that when she pops up out of the blue, you go, oh, it's the next big twist in the plot that Bond is getting. And that's just shout out the editing here because they've got these really staccato little shots between stuff going on in this sort of winter fair and there's the crowds and Bond's trying to escape and all the bad guys are coming after him and it's crowded and it's claustrophobic and you get the jump scare of this polar bear taking photographs coming up and it's just really well edited. There's no action as such, but it's a chase scene at really slow pace because it's a chase scene through a massive crowd.
The polar bears are great. Great weird bit.
Yeah. And it looks quite horrific, actually, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a very scary looking,
cute,
yeah.
Cuddly polar bear.
Yeah, he's got like a big bloody mouth, kind of. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's not what you tend to think of when you think of polar bears.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a polar bear taking a photograph as well. That's unusual, but yeah.
And we've got this sort of slightly creepy children's song going on in the background as well. Sort of, it's innocent, but it's sort of got quite a lot of menace behind it as well.
Now, you mentioned, here we go. Ba-bam.
A vision in mustard.
Look at that. The pan up.
Yeah.
It's got to be cold, right? Oh, well, no, she's got leggings on. Okay. It looked like for a second she was bare legged. Like, that's cold. But yeah, what a great, great reveal. She just looks.
But it's
just
so unexpected.
So
it's just at the right moment. And you know what? There's the bit in the start of the movie where she says, I pay my debts in full. And she, she sleeps with him and she leaves him the 20,000 francs or whatever it was from the casino. But you know what? This is the moment where she pays him back because she's here to rescue him.
Mm-hmm.
And in the way that he rescued her right at the start of the movie, she's rescuing him now. And from this moment on, they are absolutely a team. You know, she is just as good as him. She is she's amazing driving through the ice we're about to see. You know, she's got all of his instincts. They are absolutely a team. And this is where that romance moment, I think, is earned, is they are together and they are a unit. And she's got his back, absolutely. And I love this moment because I think that's the turning point in their relationship. And it's just as it's a turning point in the film. Love it.
Yeah, it's a great story beat. It's a great... Yeah, for as memorable as she is, you said you do kind of forget about her. And so when it comes back, it's that much more meaningful. Oh, yeah. Oh, and it's great seeing them together. Yeah.
You're still in it. Yeah.
Well, by the way, you mentioned the editing. And we should mention that, yes, I'm sure Peter Hunt, being an editor, had a lot of say in how the film was edited. But the credited editor to this film is John Glenn, who went on to direct a bunch of James Bond movies, including For Your Eyes Only, my Edge Octopussy, which we talked about. He went and did For Your Eyes Only, Octopussy, View to a Kill, Living Daylights, and License to Kill. He did five right in a row.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this was kind of the Bond talent program, just to kind of like room these guys and get them familiar with the beats of these things and get them kind of in the world and then, hand the films over to them. So,
yeah. Now you see, they can't get away with this moment here where he's trying to phone London in a modern movie now, because they just pull out their mobile phone.
Right. Yeah.
And he has to find a telephone box.
Steven Soderbergh has said that he feels that cell phones have ruined movies.
Yeah.
Ruined them because every plot point, obviously, in certain kinds of movies, but every plot point can be now.
Yeah.
Irma doing a drive-by. That's a nice, that'll come back. That's her style of murder is drive-by, shoot at you, and just drive away. Yeah. Well, that's something's going to work for her later on. But Soderbergh has said that when it comes to thrillers or action films, he feels that cell phones have ruined movies because they just every and for any plot point you need to solve. Get out your phone, look it up, or call somebody,
and
that's it.
Say there's no cell reception, don't you?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Now, one question. Do car tires screech on icy roads?
I think they, I guess they can't, right? I feel like they have. I feel like every time I've ever slipped on ice, I feel like you hear it, but you're right. This makes me nervous watching. Have you ever been in a car that skidded on ice, like in any severe way?
I've been, no, not badly. I've driven cars that have slipped on ice sometimes, but not to this extent, no.
I've gotten into a few accidents, and it is pretty terrifying when you're in a car that is just, I love that he kisses her as she's driving. It is really terrifying when you're in a car that is just completely out of your control. That is real scary. Real scary.
Yeah.
I know they always said
it's a bit weird.
Look at, oof, God, yeah, they're really flying too.
Yeah.
Now that she's on to a demolition derby race, which just happens to be going on at the same time around Christmas, because of course it does. Why wouldn't you have that?
Nothing in Switzerland says Christmas quite like
a demolition derby,
a stock car race,
or a stock. I guess this is a race. This isn't a demolition derby. They're not trying to hit each other, but it seems, you know, building it on an ice rink seems dubious.
Cavalier,
cavalier. Especially if you're an audience member and you're sitting anywhere near these cars. Like, I don't know,
crashes where they throw the car off the road, and you kind of go, please, spectators, move out of the way.
Look, there are people just standing there. They're not even in bleachers. They're just standing there like it's a golf match. Good Lord.
They breed them tough in Switzerland.
Wow. if anyone is killed, the survivors get a free Toblerone, all right? That's how we'll make it right. This is great. This is wonderfully... I love the guy upside down. That was good for a moment.
Yeah.
Really, a great car chase. Like, this is one of those where, like, I mean, obviously, Peter Hunt passed away in 2002, but you see this, you're like, get him on a Fast and Furious movie. You know, this is what these movies should feel like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They have weight, you know, they have a real solidity to them. They feel this is, you know, these are real cars. These people are, I mean, yeah, they're speeding up the footage and they're not going as fast as it looks, but it looks great. Just the frenetic of the editing of them. And boy, Teresa can handle herself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like, there we go. Look at people just running away. The explosions.
Yeah.
For God's sakes.
And this explode, that where their car explodes, I'm pretty sure there's a little scream at the end. And I think you're meant to think that Fraulein Bundt perished in the explosion.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, obviously, she doesn't. Because no. She comes back.
But, I don't think I even thought about that. That's what they were trying to suggest. But yeah, it could, right, because you're thinking the car explodes and bursts into flames. But yeah, right. I guess they're leaving for that. You're imagining it, but not necessarily. Yeah. I like that little single. That looks like that was shot on a set. That just that little inset. This of them with the trying to wipe the snow off the.
Yeah.
And they're gonna
again just the weather effects, you know, it's pretty well done, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, you genuinely believe that this snowstorm is pretty bad news.
Do you get severe winters where you are?
Occasionally. We're on the west of the country, so we get the benefit of the Gulf Stream, so we tend to get, you know, wet. We get more sort of flooding type things, but occasionally you get snow. And you know, up in Scotland, you'll get more snow. But global warming and all that. Yeah, so, our winters are getting wetter and warmer, I would say, generally speaking. But you know, it wouldn't be unusual for once, twice a year for us to get a bit of snow, but nothing like this.
Gotcha. Yeah. No. Usually, this is usually. Yeah.
No. No.
By the way, when you mentioned global warming and I laughed, I'm not, that's not funny. I'm just sort of whistling past the graveyard kind of thing. Like, okay. You know, yeah, we all know it's happening. So, okay.
The soft focus on Diana Rigg in this barn is turned up to 11, isn't it?
Just stunning. Why wasn't she a bigger movie star? You know, that doesn't, I never understood that she's so great. I know that the Bond movies have generally not been a springboard for great movie careers for the Bond girls for the most part. I mean, yes and no. Jane Seymour went on to some things. Barbara Bach, not really so much. Carol Bouquet, For Your Eyes Only, Maude Adams. Like, say, you know, it's not a part that lends itself to, you know, the next Meryl Streep kind of thing. But this is, as we've said, this is, she's different here. This, she's different than any Bond girl to this point, both to this point and then kind of after. And and so, yeah, and, you know, she came with a lot of acting chops. I mean, she had a perfectly fine career. I don't mean to in any way knock her, but it's not like she became a full-on movie star where she was headlining films out of
I mean, I think she kept busy. I think she did a lot of theater over here, and she did some TV and stuff, but not so much movies, I think.
Connery.
Yeah.
Connery and Craig are really the only two that managed to kind of pop out and have careers
internationally.
Internationally separate careers. Yeah. You know, Craig is going to...
Maybe not so much more after Bond, because he did quite a lot of stuff before.
Bond. Before, yeah. Well, I'm being unfair to Roger Moore, who is my favorite James Bond, I should say. Yeah. But yes, I would say, and of course, it's not fair to say that post-Bond, he didn't have much of a career. He was older then. He was like in his mid-60s, and most actors aren't still working in their mid-60s anyway. So,
And he did stuff with the UN, didn't he? Wasn't he a...
He did. He did. I mean, you know,
ambassador for the UN or something, wasn't he?
We may have talked about this when we did Octopussy, but when he died a couple of years ago, there were so many wonderful tributes to him from people, random people that said they met him on this thing or that. And there was one story that I'm not going to try and tell it because I'm going to butcher it, but it was somebody that ran into him at an airport as a kid. And got an autograph. I love, oh god, she looks so beautiful here. He's so sexy. Mr. and Mrs. James Bond. But anyway, there was a thing where he ran into this kid and he signed an autograph, and he signed it Roger Moore, not James Bond. And the little kid was disappointed because he thought he was James Bond. And then he ran into him decades later as in a professional context. Yeah. And he told Moore that story, and Moore said, "Oh, I remember that. I was undercover. And that's why I wrote that for you. I didn't want to get cut." You know, like he went along with the story. Like, and you're like, "Oh, what a great guy." You know, like that's exactly the story you want to have after meeting Roger Moore here. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Again, I don't mean to be a pig about it, but she is so sexy. And she looks so fantastic. I love this. They're going to sleep separately. Yeah. You're like, why? Yeah. Why are we doing this? This is very silly. And then, of course, he's not. He's going to pull out
they
the
are a very handsome couple.
Oh, man, they would have made beautiful children.
Yeah.
Here he's going to pull out he's got the pitchfork, and then. Hey, we got to keep warm. Come on. And the horses watch impassively. So again, the pacing of that, like we needed that, you know, we had a bunch of action scenes back to back to back to back, a little pause, you know, a little, look at that. Look how great that looks.
Yeah.
The frozen barn. It looks like The Thing. It looks great. Looks like a set from The Thing. Yeah. But again, just the pacing, like, okay, we had a nice character beat. We've caught up. We're now.
Yeah.
Look how happy she looks.
Anyway, it's pretty relentless from, you know, the whole bit in the cable car, and it just goes on and on, and you, like you say, you just need to kind of draw breath and have that moment where they're together and they're getting a bit of sleep, who knows, but you know, and then they're away and you get them, the bad guys breaking into the barn, and they're already out of there, they're already hit the slopes, you know.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the scene of them, that this wide shot of them skiing down the mountains, you know, we see that there's, you know, they're chasing Bond and Tracy.
Yeah.
But like, there aren't that many grooves in the snow.
No.
Right? Which means they probably had to get it.
Yeah.
First two, really, one or two morning. Takes, because after that, then you're showing a bunch of them, and that gives the game away that you know, they've shot this, and it that's reminds me of the apparently, like, Steven Spielberg when he first met David Lean, and he saw Lawrence of Arabia, and he's like, "How did you find all that sand with no footprints on. He's like, well, we had to kind of get it in like one take because otherwise it was ruined. Wow. Yeah.
Now, is this the most gruesome death in all of Bond history?
It's pretty rough.
The
pretty rough.
Falling in the snow.
PG rated film.
That is.
And whammo. And then the shooting of the blood out of the thing.
Pink,
oh, there's chunks.
Snow.
You can even see like kind of chunks of stuff. Oof. These guys just go right through it. I don't have time. He had a lot of guts.
that's like a bad, you know, kind of Christmas cracker joke. It's a dad joke. That no, I'm sorry, you're better than this, Bond.
I thought you were a cooler Bond. What are you doing? He really hasn't done too many of those. That's the other thing. They've been kind of, this film's been, again, for a 2 hour and 20 minute runtime. Yeah. They've been kind of light on him doing the, you know,
what there's the,
he had a great fall, you know, that kind of stuff.
There's the whole bit where he's talking about the Besants and the gold balls, and it's all, the humor is very sort of innuendo, a bit carry on, actually.
I knew you were going to bring it back to that.
Plays that really well, I think. But so he can do the comedic stuff. And I think, again, given a couple of other opportunities, I think he could have been a really, you know, much better regarded Bond than he has been historically.
Absolutely. In the commentary, they talk about this avalanche.
Yeah.
That this had to be set by the Swiss government. You can't just do it yourself. The government has to do it. And
funny
obviously, let movie producers just start avalanches. But I mean, it had to be set and controlled and all this stuff. And apparently like they showed up and they were like, are you guys going to be ready to set this off? And the government kept saying, tomorrow. And they just kept putting it off. And then eventually they did do it, but it wasn't set in exactly the same schedule that they needed. And so some of this stuff is on a set. Some of these shots are done on a set. They had to match them later because the actors couldn't be there a certain day or whatever. But so some of this stuff is, I mean, obviously this footage right here is genuine footage, but some of it is the, our actors on a set and they just had to match the footage, which
I think
quite well
anyway, just from the safety point of view. But
it looks
terrific.
Yeah,
I mean, it looks amazing. Yep. But apparently they had three explosive devices somewhere above an uninhabited valley, and set them off. But I think, if you said you were remaking this, they would go, CGI it.
Yeah,
that was really dumb. That was a practical effect with actual human stunt people in it.
Yep.
And boy, is it a good stuff. You know, it's such a good sequence that.
There is a, I believe there's a, I think it's a Swiss film called from about 10 years ago called Force Majeure. Have you ever heard of this film? And
the
setup is a family is on one of these vacations. Like they're on, like, you know, they're visiting this kind of place and there's an avalanche. And in the heat of the moment, the father saves himself, leaving his family and his wife to die in the avalanche, but then they all survive. It's about the aftermath of what that reveals about your relationship. By the way, this flashback here in the mirror, in the glass, this is the Bond's never done flashbacks before.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. But the film is about that, is about, you know, what does that, how does your relationship survive after you've found out that your spouse wouldn't try and, you know, and
you throw them under the bus.
I have not seen the film, but I desperately want to because I think, what a great premise for a film.
Fantastic. Just again, this is the greatest Christmas based action movie ever made. And you don't get, you know, stuff like avalanches, real avalanches happening these days. It's terrific. And people that haven't seen this in a while, or you know, its reputation preceding it, just stick it on and watch it, because it's such a great movie and it's such a thrill ride. Like we say, we've been, you know, we're about 2 hours in and we haven't stopped for breath yet, really, have we?
No you know, I mean, there is so much. I will say, but in between when we did our Octopussy commentary and doing this one, I have since started doing audio commentaries professionally. They've appeared on some Blu-rays, and you know, some have come out and there were more coming out in 2024. And I am not at all bringing this up to to compliment myself. They're hard. They're real hard. You know, if it's a film that there isn't a lot to research, or they're just, you know, the scenes are maybe a little on the dull side, even a short film can be very hard to keep interesting, depending on your point of view. Maybe people that have listened to my commentary say, well, you haven't done that. But, you know, like, yeah, I mean, sure, and some of them have done just me, which is harder, obviously, than it's easier when you've got two people. But nevertheless, this film is 2 hours and 20 minutes, and we have just been talking nonstop because this film gives you so much. There's so much to... I love they look back at the shot of the queen there as he was talking on the phone. But I mean, this film is just so gangbusters on how Draco has come back. We're going to find Teresa because she's been kidnapped.
Where M wouldn't go along with a plan, you see. So
yep.
Mafia's got to be a plan B in that situation, hey?
I like even kidnapped.
Yeah.
She looks fantastic. She looks marvelous in her little... a little snow muff outfit here.
Yeah. And I love we get these little intersperses of the helicopters against the beautiful sunset. Just silhouettes against the sunset. It's so much nicer than it needs to be.
Yeah. It's such a shame to think that what would have happened if this film had just done the business of You Only Live Twice. Yeah. You know, it's only and you know, we talked about Lazenby bailed. Lazenby bailed before he even finished the film. I mean, he told them, I'm not coming back. I'll do this one and then I'm done. But what would have happened if this film had been a gargantuan hit? You know, like if it had done the numbers of You Only Live Twice, maybe they would have said, you know what, audiences.
Yeah.
We accept this. Audiences are totally okay with a new James Bond. Maybe they would have gone back to him and said, look, George, you know, let's stick with this. Yeah. You know, maybe they would have said, yeah, you know what?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in the middle of the hippie revolution, but people still like James Bond. So it's okay.
Yeah. Or his agent had been a bit more flexible.
Oh, God. I don't know why you would ever. Why would you sign with that guy afterwards if you find out that was on his resume? Yeah. You're like, oh, I talked that one guy out of being James Bond. I'd be like, I don't trust you. Another great key light shot on the Diana Rigg there. I should mention, I don't think I mentioned this on our Octopussy commentary. James Bond, considering how popular it was / is, for many decades, curiously, had no real comic book tie-ins. Which makes no sense. You would think that something as, you know, it's all action and sex and fun, it would translate beautifully to a comic book. And yet there was very few comic book adaptations. There was a Dr. No adaptation that was published by DC Comics in the early 60s. It was a one-off. It wasn't until 1971 that someone went back in the files and noticed that when DC bought the rights to the Dr. No comic, it gave them the rights to do James Bond comics for 10 years and they never did anything with it.
Oh boy.
Nobody ever knew. They just didn't know.
Oversight.
And so,
I was going to say, was it that Ian Fleming was going, I do written James Bond. Thank you very much. Nobody else gets to do it.
Apparently not.
It
was just somebody at DC didn't look at the contract, you know, and didn't notice. And so they never, and you know, apparently there really was, you know, we have the hindsight, we have the 2020 of being able to say, well, I have James Bond changes. That's just the way, that's just the way it is. But back then, that nobody thought that. Everyone thought, no, Connery is Bond. Mm. And without Connery, this doesn't work. And after they replaced him successfully with Roger Moore, they realized, that's the new dimension of James Bond. We can have different James Bonds and people will, if the films are good, they'll accept it. And of course, so there was not another, I mean, they're only talking America, obviously British comics is different, but there was not another James Bond movie adaptation in a comic book form until For Your Eyes Only by Marvel in 1981, which is funny because that is one of the least comic bookie of the Bond films. It's more like a spy thriller. And then they did Octopussy, and then not again, basically. Okay. So James Bond, it's such a shame. Do you think that this would have made a great movie.
Yeah.
A comic book, you know.
And back then, do they, because the thing now is, do you have the likeness rights or whatever it is
right.
they call them, you know, but say, so were they doing it as Connery in the 60s? Were they doing it as Moore, or was it generic, handsome looking guy who's a spy who we're calling James Bond? Do you know?
In Dr. No, in the Dr. No adaptation, he doesn't look like Connery. Mm-hmm. In the For Your Eyes Only, he looks a little like Roger Moore. I'm going to assume that they had the rights to do it, but
okay.
But yeah, it's a weird.
It looks like Roger Moore. Okay.
Yeah, it's yeah. About this whole, yeah. But setting this at dawn is such a great, and you know, extra. That's extra hard, because you've only got a very sliver, tiny sliver of time that you can shoot this to where it's going to match. So Peter Hunt is making it harder on himself.
Yeah.
For shooting this when he's shooting this, because you don't get full, you know, you're not setting it at noon and you can fake it.
It looks beautiful, doesn't it? Again, this whole sequence is better than it has any right to be. It really is.
It really does.
Against this beautiful backdrop.
I love, here we go. She's grabbing, but I like, she threatens the guy with the broken bottle. Like, she's look at that.
And she's going for it.
Yeah.
She is. I mean, it's only sugar glass, but you know,
well,
she's not hanging. You know. She's not hanging about. You know?
Yeah.
That would be nasty. Yeah. It's just a thoroughly good action sequence here.
A guy's just jumping out of the helicopters.
Yeah.
They talk about that in the commentary too. They said that they had to rig that because the snow was so deep that the guys would just fall like 10 feet in the snow.
Oh boy.
And then screwed. So yeah, they had to dig out the snow, find where the floor was, and then put snow back just enough that you could fall into it and not disappear like General Zod at the bottom of the Fortress of Solitude. You know?
Now, they've had these very spiky sculpture things by the doors, and oh boy, he's going to get it in the back. Oh, ow.
She's great. Yeah, she can really kick ass.
She is.
He's a big dude, but she can really. Yeah. I love this. The use of the decoration.
Yes.
I love he's got the ring around his head.
Yeah.
And then he's going to fall. But yeah, this is so Inception. I mean, it's unbelievable. When I'm watching it over, like, oh my God, Chris Nolan just really, the uniforms are exactly the same.
Yeah. So was this, she wasn't in the, was she in the Avengers at the same time as this? Because she was doing a lot of action stuff in the Avengers, wasn't she?
I thought that she was done by this point.
Okay.
She had wrapped it up.
Okay.
I think. I've not seen too much of the Avengers. I should. Yeah. You think that would be a show I would love. I don't know why that's not been anything I've really delved into.
Yeah.
But it's hip spy people, sure. And Diana Rigg in like awesome little outfits. Like, what's not to love?
Patrick McNee?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. There we go.
I love Draco's immediately get her to safety. Yeah. He's such a, like, she managed to kill about five henchmen by herself. Yeah. She doesn't need you to get, you know, get the girls to safety. Like, she's fine. Flamethrowers. This is really quite the Donnybrook here. We're just mowing guys down.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this. The cable snapping. Oh, this guy throwing things.
Yeah, the stuff from the lab.
Look at that. It's great. That's a great bit. They threw the vial of acid.
And then you've got the kind of hole in the glass.
That's great. He just kind of gives it that look of like, oh, I'm glad that didn't hit me. That's good. He's going to look for the secret controller. For
your secret movie theater, Rob.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
I would get the Shakespeare head from the Batman TV show, which is what I would do. Just lean into it. Just what the hell? Let's just go all the way. I love these testing. Ah, there we go. I found the right switch. Okay.
Yay.
That's my world domination map.
There we go.
And again, I love the little insets.
Camera, yeah.
The shots of the girls.
Yeah.
Great little.
So now they know who they're looking for.
Yep. God, God. this is so good. Oh my God. It's not like I didn't watch this four or five times before we were doing this, but yeah. Good Lord, this is fun.
Yeah.
Well, Pete, this thanks. Is
the greatest Christmas themed action movie ever made.
This, you know, I've said before, For Your Eyes Only is my favorite. I would not argue to anybody it's the best. I can't honestly make that argument. It's my favorite. It's my sentimental favorite because of when I saw it and how I saw it. And it's the film that makes me happy. I put it on it. And you know, sometimes if I'm feeling a little low, I put it on and that theme comes on and I just feel happy. Yeah. But this, you can't argue. This is not one of the best of the bunch. I just think you just can't.
There's another bit of really horrible violence against Diana Rigg just coming up.
He's going to drag her onto the helicopter.
Punch her out and stick her on the helicopter.
Oh, man. Spare the rod and spoil the child, eh? Oh, yeah, Lord, Draco.
No.
I'm sure your wife was super happy all those years. I'm sure she... Yeah, man. He punched his own daughter. I mean, he's thinking he's doing it to save her life, but...
Punched it into unconsciousness. That is not good parenting.
Nope. Great jumps out of there. And then boom.
Massive explosion, which obviously they
have to. Right. Now they have to cut the right
shot because I've been to Piz Gloria. And right.
They did not destroy it for the film. No. That's great. I love the ice bridge, the snow bridge that collapses amazing, under his feet.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah. And so we've still got yet another action sequence in the bobsleigh to come.
Yeah, man, this film is more than a meal. Like, this is like a meal and a half.
Yeah, the stuff they pack in is just amazing. I think bobsleighing must be the most terrifying thing to do. Definitely sure you can't drive a bobsleigh and fight at the same time. I think driving the bobsleigh takes all your attention and concentration and physical strength. And trying to have a fight while you're doing that is not going to happen.
Have you ever ridden on one of those?
No, God, no. I think I'm a lunatic. No, we just said, you know, this country does not have a whole lot of snow and ice. But our local university has a very good sport reputation for sports. And the Olympic bobsleigh team do train at the university in Bath. They don't have a lot of snow, but they've got some sort of special setup that's very slippery and allows them to do it. There was one of the female, was it luge or bobsleigh or something? One of the local students did win a medal in it in a Winter Olympics some years ago. So she's a bit of a local celeb.
Oh, wow. That's very exciting.
Yeah. And do you like, because you're big into the Olympics, aren't you? Do you like the Winter Olympics just as much?
Yeah, I do. I find all of it to be just terribly exciting. I just find the whole notion of like devoting your whole life, you know, to something how much you're willing to sacrifice the sacrifices that you and your family probably have to make.
Yeah.
I just find to be just very stirring, you know, and I don't particularly root for my own country. You know, I'm just that just not built that way. I'm kind of like, this person, you know, I mean, whoever wins. It's presumably kind of as much as you can is a meritocracy.
But
I always find it to be just very stirring of the sacrifice you make to be excellent at this age, you know, to be 19 and be the best at something.
I think it's you know, it's a really good showcase for all the minority sports. So if the thing you get into is curling, you don't necessarily root for your own side because it's curling and, you know,
right,
who cares, but you know, you just want to see the skill of it, don't you? And I don't think if you fell off and you got your head caught in the fork of a branch like that, that you survive that. I think that's a very good place. snap your cervical
yeah,
spine.
Yeah, your head is coming off.
I don't think you're surviving that, let alone, you know, if you did, you're certainly not walking afterwards. But
did you see the most recent Indiana Jones film?
No.
Dial of Destiny. There's a scene where Mads Mikkelsen's head, he's on a train, and it, he gets hit with a metal post. And I'm okay. Like, how is his head not off? You know, like,
yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't understand.
Yeah. Now, Rob, you're now an expert on wedding rings. So what do you think of this wedding ring that they pick for their marriage?
I think wedding rings are kind of a scam a little bit in terms of the way that they are make you feel bad that you can't afford a $4 billion ring or something. Yeah. But, you know, it's very pretty.
And the ring here is very beautiful, but it doesn't look timeless. It looks very 1969 to me.
Interesting. Oh, I didn't even think about
very,
that.
You know, it comes from a very particular period of design, I think. So it's nice, but it's just not, you know, your simple band with a stone in it. It's quite 60s. And here are all the goons in their morning suits applauding at the wedding.
All's forgiven. It's all good.
Hey,
it's
there we
fine.
Go.
I will say when it comes to jewelry, I can't judge what looks good because I see those ads here. There are jewelers that do it. Like there's a company called Zales and things like that. And they do. And to me, the stuff looks ugly. Like to me, it looks gaudy and ugly.
Yeah.
And yet that supposedly is the height of you know, and so my tastes just don't line up with what I supposedly is what is classy. You know, I just kind of like, oh, all right, whatever. So obviously when it came time to get a ring, I did not. My wife and I went to go get it together and try and guess what she was going to like.
Yeah.
So he's going to get some advice here.
I think the floristry bill for this wedding must be astronomical. But do you know what? I'm okay with the mafia spending a lot of money on flowers. I think there are worse things the mafia could spend money on.
And that is true.
Keeping the local florists in business.
That
I'm
is
okay
true.
With that.
That is true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you know, instead of garroting somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just going to give Bond some money and then Bond's saying, nope, put it right back.
What is £1 million in 1969?
Oof.
That must be a lot of money. That is
not here. Million, here's our Lois Maxwell, Miss Moneypenny.
This is lovely.
Yeah, it's sweet.
Such a nice, touching scene, and he throws the hat. And, oh,
yeah. It gives her a little bit of. She's usually such kind of a joke character on purpose throughout the films, you know, like, did she really think
she
Bond
does
with
have
you know?
Feelings. I don't.
But
think
but she's a real
she
person.
Yeah.
That's a marvelous shot. That
could be
that.
The end of the movie, couldn't
yeah.
it? That
yeah.
Could be the end of the movie.
Yep.
That shot.
Yeah, that's sweet.
But it's not the end of the movie.
No, we're still
not.
We're still not done.
Twist coming up. Oh. And this scene in the car is so great because it shows this is the couple that they, spoiler, could have been.
Yeah,
you know?
When they're not being super secret agents. They're just being a man and a woman married.
Being and trying to kill people with broken wine bottles and, you know, all that stuff. This is who they, this is their life together.
Yep. Beautiful, driving right by the water there. Reminds me of, again, when I went to one of my honeymoon and we went to the Pacific Coast Highway. And we, oh, now, don't stop.
Yeah. Is this meant to be Italy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't stop the car.
Gorgeous.
Oh, you want to jump in? No, but this is it.
And they're so funny. He puts the carnation in her mouth and they're joking.
This is so sad.
So nice together. Oh.
We're going to have to talk a little bit post the film ending because there's just too much to say to fit in the next 90 seconds of this film. Yeah. It delivers such a hammer blow and then it just credits, you know, like it really.
Oh.
So be warned, everybody. The episode's going to run. Oh, here we are. Here we are.
Oh.
Here's Irma. He's got a neck brace on.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da. Oh, man.
And then he leans back. And that shot.
Think she's okay. And then, And then the right in the head. Ugh.
That shot where you get
the reveal.
The hole in the windscreen.
Yeah.
The focus goes back to her. and you just see her, and then she falls. Oh my god! Punch in the gut.
Yep. And then he's gonna recur the theme. By the way, we should mention the song "All the Time in the World" by Louis Armstrong. It is the last thing he recorded. He passed away.
Right?
Yes, he passed away in 1971. This was like the last thing he ever recorded. Is this song? And the reason this moment, and he's showing the cop the ring.
Yeah.
The reason I think this works with Lazenby that it wouldn't with Connery, or would be different. Let me say not wouldn't yeah. work with Connery, but to me, the Connery Bond, if this happened to him, he would leave her behind and he would be chasing after those guys because he would be all about, yeah. I'm going to cut their heads off.
He's too cold.
He would be, he, you know, and yeah. then we're going to go right to.
He goes. Lazenby goes into husband mode.
Yes.
And Connery
yes.
goes into assassin mode.
Connery would be, I am going to yeah. grind them up into yeah. tiny powder. I'm going to be
there
so, you know.
Nothing on earth or in hell that will stop me
yep.
getting them now.
Yep.
And Lazenby just takes the beat and has the moment with
yep.
her.
Yes, that's yeah. it. That's right. That to me is what makes them yeah. makes it different is that the Connery Bond would not that he doesn't care for her, but he would then
yeah.
just flow.
Yeah.
You go into, you would have to tint the screen red
yeah.
Because it would be Bond vision of just, you know, I'm going to murder them all slowly. And I don't care what MI6
yeah.
says.
Yeah.
I don't care. Yeah. And then we get the music, you know, we go right to, you know, the banner, banner.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's talk yeah. about kind of.
Yeah.
And then
it's,
we will
and it's
return.
The Bond music. And it's not, we have all the time in the world, which would be
no.
a soft way out, isn't it? It's back into Bond mode. Yeah.
James Bond will return. I cannot
wow.
imagine what that would have felt like to see in the original theater and to have that much of a gut punch. And yeah. then just be like, well, Bond will be back though. Like I,
yeah.
you go, huh?
And
what?
You can't imagine. And you know, it didn't do the numbers, but you kind of go, how does that ending? Because it is a shock ending.
Yep.
How does that ending not people come out of the cinema going, oh my God, we saw the new Bond. You've got to go and see it. And I'm not telling you how it finishes. Do you know what I mean? You know, that's
mm-hmm.
the, how did it not do that?
Yep.
I have no idea. No,
it's
idea.
Like the Planet of the Apes ending, you know, where
yeah.
it just ends
yeah.
ends with
yeah.
this monumental
the
reveal, and then you're
yeah.
just like, oh, go up outside and, you know, mm. go back to your life, everybody.
Yeah,
yeah. It's. I mean, what as we're done here? I mean, what do you think of that? Do you feel like is it too much? No, yes. I mean, do you feel like it's super heavy for a James Bond movie?
It is. And I think that's why it's got this legacy, isn't it? Because it's that kind of, you know, there are these moments. There's the moment where Bond is revealed to be not Hilary Bray. That's a turning. That's a twist in the movie. There's another twist in the movie when Tracy shows up on the ice rink out of the blue. She's out of sight, out of mind for 3/4 of an hour. And she's just there and she's back. And suddenly she's the lifeline that Bond needs. And then there's the final, like you say, 3 minutes of the movie, and it all pivots again. And that pivot goes into the rest of the series. Like we say, it's referenced time and time and time again, all the way through the franchise. Stunning film. I just love it. I think it's great.
Yeah. It's
and like I say, and that's despite Lazenby not, I think he's great. I think he's absolutely fine. And I think he had, you know, like you say, the parallel dimension. His reputation is not great as Bond, but this film has such a legacy because it hits the emotional core of the character.
It really does. It really, really does. And it's, you know, people that make movies, you know, I mean, that's I'm not in that world at all. And so it's easy for people outside of them to have opinions about stuff. And,
yeah.
you know, I always remark about when I read biographies of actors and stuff mm-hmm. or directors, and they say they put out a film and it dies. And mm-hmm. I think to the rest of us, that doesn't matter anymore. You know what I mean? You
yeah.
might remember, oh, that was a flop, but you don't care. You're just
yeah.
like, oh, I just enjoyed the movie. But to those people, it's devastating.
Yeah.
It's devastating to put this much work into it and have audiences just utterly
mm-hmm.
reject it.
Mm-hmm.
And not that this film was rejected.
No.
It was very successful. But it was considered a step back for the Bond series. And with, you know, 30 years down the line, 40 years now, 55 years down the line, you look at it and say, this is one of the greatest action films ever made.
Yeah.
Not even one of the great Bond films, one of the great action films, period.
And,
How did they not know that?
And I think a lot of that is because Lazenby is perceived as a bit of a misstep.
Yep.
But I don't think that's a fair judgment on him.
No.
As an actor, I don't think that's a fair judgment on this movie. You know, it definitely deserves reevaluation, I think. And I just love watching it. It's great.
It really is. It's a total blast. I own it on Blu-ray and along with a bunch of other Bond films. And it's what could have been, you know. I mean, I would never want to deny the world Roger Moore, because again, he's my favorite Bond, but it would have been interesting to see what they could have done if he had stuck with it. Maybe not for 7 films, maybe for 2, 3, then at the same time, you know what? Maybe it's better that it stands, that it is unique. It's the one Lazenby, and that's the only time we'll ever do it. And you want to see what it might have looked like? Well, here's the one example.
Yeah.
And that's it. So
I can see him in Diamonds Are Forever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I can see anybody but Moore in Live and Let Die.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair. I think that's fair. So, but he's still around. He's still with us. Of course, we've lost Moore. We've lost Connery, but Lazenby, he's about 90 years old, but he's still out there. And he used to be on Twitter for a while, and he was very outspoken about, he would tell some right wing chowderhead would show up, and he would tell him to go F himself and stuff like that. Like, I love that. You know, he's kind of an old man, doesn't care anymore. And I love that about him. And so, God bless him. I did a great job, and the film will live on forever. And it's a really one of the great action movies of all time. So, Chris, thank you so much for wanting to do this. When you first mentioned it, I have to say I was a little daunted because of the film's the film's length. I was like, oh my God, this is a major undertaking. But this was a total blast. And so, again, thank you for being the driver of this particular commentary.
That's a pleasure. It's always good to chat, and especially when it's such a good film as this. And maybe you'll have to get some other people doing Bond ones now that we've done two. You'll have to get
You want to corner the market, that's fine. That's okay.
Well, 24 to go, Rob.
Exactly. The world is not enough. Commentary can be pretty rough. But I have other commentaries planned for Film Noir. I know Film and Water as a show kind of is just sort of shows up every so often. But I do have some other commentaries planned for 2024. Because like as I mentioned, now that I'm doing them professionally, I've kind of gotten in that rhythm. And they're not that they haven't been fun to do before, but now I've gotten a little more experience with them. I kind of have it down a little about how to do it and how to structure it and stuff like that. And so there'll be more to do. And Chris, as you know, we will be doing a MASH cast together at some point.
Yes.
There are other commentaries I'm sure we will be doing in calendar year 2024. I always enjoy talking to you, and these commentaries have always been a blast. So thank you once again.
We've mentioned a couple of movies, haven't we? Nothing firm, but
We'll have definitely some ideas. So anyway, thank you all for listening. I really appreciate it. All 2.5 hours of this. You can find all the back episodes of Film and Water on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. If you like this show, please check out my other movie show, Fade Out, where I talk about the final films of various actors and directors and writers, anyone who had a career in Hollywood. We talk about their career through the lens of their final film, and I'm really proud of it. So please go check the show. And I've had some absolutely amazing guests on that show. I've had screenwriters, I've had editors, I've had actors, I've had directors. I've been incredibly fortunate to have some of the guests I've had on that show. And so please go check it out.
It's
again,
such a good listen, Rob. It's so well researched, and I always learn so much listening, and you and your guest are just it's an education in movie. It really is. So I love Fade Out.
Thank you very much. I did not pay Chris to say that, everybody. And of course, if you want to support the Firewater Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Matt Sorois, Gord Tolton, and David S. Gutierrez for their support of the Firewater Podcast Network. So that is going to do it. Thank you for listening. Like as I said, Film and Water will be back before you know it. But until then, that's a wrap.
We'll be right back.